Tonight, Mortality Radio, show number 50.
Our golden anniversary.
Yeah, buddy. Tonight we got Ed Greenwood coming at you.
Also a goldie.
Yep, and watch those anti-forgotten Rome sentiments. They'll get you punted. Punted so that you will not land anytime tonight. They're going to have a nice interview with Ed Greenwood. We also have our behind-the-screen contest winner. He is already picked. And we're going to have a nice prize for him, and we're going to have some live call-ins later on. Smog brought in some product to talk to you guys about. Next show, we'll be covering only PDFs. PDF Roundup. So stick with us, guys. You got about another 40 seconds before you get to hear us more. Good evening. Welcome to Mortality Radio, show number 50. This is Adlon.
And Smog.
And we are here to...
The real Smog.
The real Smog. Not Smog Light.
Or Smog Lit.
Or Diet Smog, or anything like that. Anyhow, guys, how you all been over the last 2 weeks? We got a nice interview for you tonight with Ed Greenwood. And like I said earlier during the pre-show stuff, I am a very typical fanboy. I like the Forgotten Realms. I ran one straight campaign for 6 years in the Realms, and I've got 12 years overall running in the Realms. I pretty much stopped with the Forgotten Realms when 3rd edition came out.
There's so many places to choose from.
Yeah, well, I love the Realms of Death, man. I know them inside and out, up through the end of 2nd edition. And I wanted something fresh is the only reason why I went with a different campaign setting.
I'm a big fan of the Realms. I'm a bigger fan of Greyhawk, but
yep.
I love the Realms.
So we got Ed going to be calling in here in a little bit and giving us some interview. And we got a couple of prizes to award tonight. We got one guy that wins a prize for submitting a topic to our behind-the-screen segment. Those of you who are unfamiliar with the Behind the Screen segment, you need to visit www.mortality.net, and you'll see the Mortality Radio banner there. Click on that, and it explains how you enter to win. You basically submit a topic in a forum. If it's picked, you win. It's that easy. Our first night, we gave away a copy of Book of Erotic Fantasy from the Valar Project. The second segment we had last show was won by Juan Jose, and he took home a copy of The Deep, which is a hardbound aquatic supplement by Mystic Eye Games. And tonight we have a nice prize also, valued at just over $25.
You know, The Deep's a good book. I played hooky from doing some reviews for about a week, and actually sat down and deeply read through things.
Did you?
As opposed to just, you know, fast scanning them. And I was really impressed by it.
It's definitely a well-put-together book. Obviously, it's going to apply a lot more to people if you have the aquatic thing happening in your game.
Yep.
But it's almost can be broken off as a complete campaign setting.
Yes, it can.
So it's got pretty much all you need to do there. So, you know, we're not chintzy with these prizes, guys, and we make it fairly easy to win. The Behind the Screen segment, you basically post a topic. If we pick it, you win. It's that easy.
And we want to give a good thanks to the publishers who donate the prizes that we do give out. And, you know, there's a bunch of them in the room tonight. And we're glad to see some old faces we haven't seen in quite a while, and
yeah,
really
no,
glad to see some of the new faces.
No doubt. Look who's back here. We got Tenzin. We got Ghostwind, who's been away for a while. Morris, who is doing the late night shift to be here tonight.
Phenanthalus.
Will Upchurch, thanks for coming, bud. I know you're a busy man. We definitely appreciate it. Phenanthalus, yep, and
Gallipaw,
formerly our UK relay.
John Weatherby.
And let's see here. I've seen Papa Holdy here a few times, but Sirius Black is back. Tadero, he was here on our first welcome back after the New Year show.
He was the
first Behind the Screen winner.
That's right, Book of Erotic Fantasy.
Thoth and Zybek, they've been here on occasion in the past also, so good to see some of you faces that we haven't seen here. If Tadero can win, you must have a shot. Alrighty then.
Okay, well, I...
By the way, before you go, all you people who have already submitted Behind the Screen topics, the only thing I see is having so many good topics. All the topics getting posted there are good. I can't think of one that I would say, eh. They're all good stuff, so
keep them coming.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to put the URL for the Shoutcast page, so those of you who want to read up on how to enter, guys, it's pretty easy. So you can go ahead and kill the dead air.
While he's doing that, I just want to bring up a real, it's kind of a messy point for me as a father. You know, we're down in Fort Myers. We're not too far away from where the little girl was kidnapped last Sunday, and then her body was found this morning. We also, within the last week, it was reported that an older girl, 28, was kidnapped from our area and has disappeared, and she met her suspected, alleged abductor in the Neverwinter Nights chat room. So if you are the parent or you play on the chat rooms on these boards, please be careful. I know as a father, I know how worried I get when Bruce and Patrick are out and about at different things and I'm not with them. And I know other fathers who would, you know, it would break their heart if anything like that were to happen to their children. So, you know, it's up to us as responsible people on the web to, you know, we're a community. We need to police ourselves and put the warning out. So, having said my political piece for the night, we will move on to the regular show, which is some reviews.
Yeah, also a big shout out to those of you guys who are tuning in from psionics.net. Saying that admin's name is tough. BYNW.
That's right.
Dude, big kick butt for the relay bot, and big shout out to you guys listening in from Psionics. I just tried to do a list, and I think maybe we broke the bot, because all I'm pulling up is the mortality link. And wait a minute, is Psylink still here?
It's mirrored. Yes, he is. Yeah, it is. It's mirrored.
Yeah, but they're not. It's not listing. Benu. Okay, thank you. Benu.
Okay, right. Now we got some reviews to do. My Uncle Sam was pretty nice to me. I've already got my tax returns back.
I think we broke the bot.
It could be.
Because it ain't listing who's on the other channel, but we're getting relays.
Yeah.
So the bot's working, but he's not listening to... anyway.
So, I made a trip to the local Walden Books, plus I got some stuff in from Ossium this week. First up are a couple of books that came out at Gen Con last summer from Fantasy Flight Games, and that would be City Works and Sorcery and Steam. They've been out at Walden Books for a while. They were kind of mid-range on my priority list. I had the extra scratch this week, so they got bumped up. Plus, Walden Books was having a sale, buy three and get one free.
Who did you say they would buy?
Fantasy Flight Games.
Okay, I got Will Upchurch going FFG, so I thought you might have missaid something there.
No. I'm a big FFG.
You know,
fan.
Will keep you on the straight and narrow.
Yes, he will.
We need that too, by the way, because you know what? We're just two dudes who work for a living and just happen to have and we're old, but we just happen to have some technology at our disposal. So, thanks for posting that, Benu.
Next up is the Psychic's Handbook from Green Ronin. It's a masterclass book. Next in the series, done by Steve Kenson, who did the Witches and the Shamans masterclass books.
He's done a couple. He's definitely done a few for Green Ronin.
He's done a bunch.
He's been around too.
Something cool about this one. This one is not only good for straight D&D. This one also has rules in it for D20 Modern.
Yep.
To take your psychic characters into D20 Modern. We move over to the home base and go to WotC, and I picked up Complete Warrior, which I was rather impressed. The chapter on prestige classes is almost 100 pages, and there's probably about 20 to 30 prestige classes in there. Like, we needed more, but there's a number in here, and... some of them look pretty good, and
let me see that. I want to flip around.
I was looking at them for possibly my sorcerer bard to pick up one of the prestige classes in there.
Now let's cover the. I mean, it's a very pretty book, as
yes,
is classic from Wizards. Now let's cover the downside. $26.95 for 159 usable pages.
Right.
Ow.
It's expensive.
It's almost. As expensive as a player's handbook, and you got
it's
about
half the size.
It's half the size. So you basically have a class book on steroids for $27. It's hardbound, typical Wizards quality. Oh yeah, definitely.
It's got some great art. It's got some great stuff in it. I've just got it about 2 hours ago. So
yeah.
I thumbed through it while I was eating dinner tonight. And was impressed by a couple of the character classes, and I'm thinking maybe one or two of them might apply to my Sorcerer Bard Weird Uncle Rufus's campaign.
Well, I think this one will go to my Pash pile, now that I've actually looked through it and got the sticker shock out of it.
Well, it's actually not too bad, but you know what? There are how many class books floating around right now?
There must be five... renowned fighter books out there.
Right. I mean, Mongoose has two out, plus the Ultimate.
Yeah.
So that's three. Sword and Sorcery has a fighter's book. That's not what I'm leading up to, but they have a fighter's book too.
Yeah, and theirs is not too bad. I mean,
right,
you know, I have several of the dedicated fighter books, and...
So, I don't know if WotC just, you know, they held out too long to start this series or what. I'm also waiting for Unearthed Arcana to come out so I can blow my 2 cents on that. and see what that's all about.
Well, only for nostalgia, I'll pick that one up automatically. I have to, because the original Unearthed Arcana was pretty kick-butt.
That's right, Harlock. Steve Kenson also wrote Mutants and Masterminds, so he's an Emmy award-winning writer, and he puts out some good stuff. Now, since I was leading up to it, I play a sorcerer bard in Weird Uncle Rufus' Scarlands campaign. So, since it was buy four and get the third one, or get the fourth one for free, this was my fourth book.
Oh, is that a sale they're running?
Yeah, it's a special all this week.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh,
so, I popped in there and
the discount still applies.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to all the books this weekend.
Oh, well, you know, Chris was ecstatic. He said, I needed this sale, and there I was. So,
well, I just found out, too, I'm getting a nice chunk back from Uncle Sam.
I filed a week ago Wednesday electronically and had it direct deposited. It was in there this morning. So
yeah.
10 days, I think that's the fastest turnaround I've ever had on my taxes.
I always do early. I always do electronic direct deposit.
So it means I can renew my car insurance early and get that headache out of the way. But moving along as I'm trying to lead into this, I picked up Sword and Sorcery's Player's Guide, Wizards, Bards, and Sorcerers, which was my number four pick, only because I couldn't find Creature Collection 3. I have seen this, one of the other players in the group, Cleon, he's got the entire series, so I've read through this before. It's got some good stuff. It's split up into the three classes, Wizards, Bards, and Sorcerers. It has some storyline to it.
My opinion on that book is the Bards are covered the best in there as far as spells, magic items, stuff like that. That's my opinion, though.
That was what also one of the draws for me to pick it up.
It had a lot of good Bardic stuff in there, and you add in stuff from the Enchiridion of Mystic Music from S.T. Cooley. And you got some nice bardic stuff.
That's
there.
Right. And it's got some nice appendixes.
Plus there's the Book of Eldritch Might. Which one was Bard? Songs and Souls of Power. That was
right.
That two or three?
Yeah, it was two.
Two.
Now, this one is not D20. And I actually had not heard of this before, but when I was opening up my Ossium envelope and pulling these out, Weird Uncle Rufus happened to be walking by, and he's like, oh, you mean somebody still makes that? and this is something I had not heard of, but some of you might have out there, and it's called Cult Beyond the Veil. And it's a very dark, modern setting book. It's put out by Seventh Circle and Paradox Entertainment. It has one of the most innovative designs to it as far as the actual physical makeup of the book. It's got a paper, slip paper, glossy paper cover, you know, perfect bound, but it's gatefolded. And those of you that know what gatefold means, that means the cover is...
It's a built-in bookmark.
Right, it's a built-in bookmark, front and back.
Or it can also be used as like an inside cover folder if you want to stash some loose papers in there also. It can be used for that.
That's right. So it kind of caught my attention for that. The credits and the index are on the insides of the gatefold.
Nitassin, yes, he did say Cult, K-U-L-T.
That's right.
It is a Swedish RPG, and it is translated. In fact, it clearly states this is what, the U.S. version?
Yes,
what's the exact terminology?
This new U.S. edition.
U.S. edition, yep.
Provides the complete magic system, including Beyond the Boundaries, Heart, Mind, and Soul, and the Conjurer's Guide. So,
that's it from Sweden, yeah.
Nitassin, if you're in America or you're overseas, this is a book. No, it's not Chol from the Forgotten Realms. That's Cult, K-U-L-T. Beyond the Veil. It is a Bible heavy, not Bible in the sense of it preaches the Bible, but there's a lot of demons and devils and angels and the hidden world. And I read this over the past two nights, and it was fascinating stuff. I've done studies on the Bible and several other modern religions, and they really delve deep into a lot of current, not just Christian, but Judaism, dogma, and some of the outstanding ones. So it's a very nice book. It's very thick. It's a little over 300 pages. So $35, it's available from Ossium.
$40 Canadian, verify that.
Doesn't have Canadian pricing on it.
Really?
It says $35. It's a U.S. edition.
Alrighty. Yep, U.S. edition.
So that would be about right, $40 Canadian. Many different versions of it. So Weird Uncle Rufus's pick of the week. Weird Uncle Rufus is a big Green Ronin fan, so his pick of the week this week is Psychic's Handbook. Like we said, it's the master class. It's $16.95, 79 pages, lots of really cool psychic stuff. I'm not a big Psion fan myself, but there's a lot of really cool psychic stuff that could make it really interesting, especially the way they spin it, so that they kind of tie the psychic stuff into your sorcerer, so you can multi-class off a sorcerer and make it seem even more powerful. So that's what we've got for reviews. Did you bring anything in tonight yourself?
Nope.
Oh, well, we were going to talk about...
Yeah, actually, pull out that Mystic Eye book.
We got this last show.
Yeah, we had it for about an hour last show. You know, some of these shipments come in at the 11th hour, so to speak.
Well, it's not so much they come in at the 11th hour. It's we get off work and we get our mail, and that's when it's there.
Yep.
I mean, it may have been sitting in our box for 5 hours, but...
Last show, we talked about the Player's Advantage Rogue book from Mystic Eye Games. And we were both pretty ignorant of the book, obviously, having possession of it for less than an hour before showtime. And I threatened everybody that I'd actually go home and read it and then come on back and let you know what I thought. Well, I did it. Basically, I'll rehash real quick. It's a class book based on for rogues, $19.99 cover price, so $20. Taking away the OGLEs in the back, you got 99 totally usable pages. Overall, not much white space at all. Pretty packed with content. And you get archetypes, you get classes, prestige classes, combination of classes for rogues, feats, equipment, powers, spells, and magic items, a couple of monsters you get in there.
Now, when we talk about these combinations of classes, there's one thing we should say. There's an awful lot of OGL content. A lot of these classes are taken from other D20 books.
Definitely.
And then they take them and they start mixing them to come up with some of these combined classes to really put a spin on things and make it really interesting. So it's not a wholly original product, but what it does is it takes a lot of the information that's out there and kind of teaches you how to put spins on it you may not have thought of in the past and really make a really cool tricked out rogue.
A lot of the OGL content, you know, we got sources listed here, and one thing I will say is they listed the source where it's from. Any OGL content that they used, we got stuff from Plot and Poison, Mercenaries.
Well, you go to the back.
Nyambi African Adventures. Yeah, it'll be on the Section 15.
Yeah,
so,
if I remember right, when I reviewed this for D20 Zines, come back one page. There it is.
Yep.
If I remember right, my count was something like somewhere between 25 and 40 different sources that they pulled out of OGL.
Yeah, I was thinking about reading the list, but I'd be here for 20 minutes.
But
so,
there's a lot of Bastion, there's some Fantasy Flight Games.
There's some Natural 20 Press, which is now Ian Publishing, from Ian World. Some references to Wild Spellcraft.
So there's a bunch of stuff in here. So
Player's Handbook, Wizards of the Coast.
Right. They, like I said, they pulled pulled a lot of stuff. They threw it into it's like going to a bar. They threw it into a mixer. They spun it around, and now they've got a whole bunch of new drinks for you to try.
The bottom line is you got a class book that's pretty open and adaptable and usable in most games. I'd allow it in a Forgotten Realms game. I'd allow it in a Scarred Lands game.
And it's done by Charles Clemens, who is a familiar name off of Mystic Eye and
yep.
other places. So those are our reviews for the night, and we're winding down on 8:30.
Yep, we should be getting a call here any second. Oops! Boy, that was psychic, huh? All right, well, that was the right line and the right time, but something might have happened on the connection attempt there, so we're sure we'll get a ring.
Yeah, there's Evil Beaker joining just in time. Hopefully, if that was Ed calling in, he will call back.
Evil Beaker.
He's already voiced.
Well, he should be opt.
He's
yeah,
opt.
He okay, good.
So, good to see you. We did not hang up on Ed Greenwood.
No.
Yeah, we picked up the line, and the line was dead. So, Ed, if you're out there listening to us, call back.
I guarantee you, Ed is not listening.
Ed did not hang up on us. He's in Canada. It's just one of those things. So.
We have got a nice crowd in here tonight.
Yes, we do. This is our 50th show. For those of you who have been here from the beginning, we'd like to thank you for tuning in weekly. Those of you who show up when you can. I know Ghostwind and Evil Beaker are both parents, and you know, and other people in the room. Friday night is their day night.
This could be it. Nothing here.
Well, we call him.
I'm going to check that number real quick.
So, while he's checking his number on his cell phone, we will continue on. You're a parent? You know, you're not a parent at the moment.
He's coming up as busy.
He's probably trying to call back. So, the prank callers. It's probably the sucky Sprint service down here in Florida, but you never know. Greyhawk fans calling in to clog up the line. That's classic.
Alrighty. Well, let's see. I got to do a little scrambling here, so why don't you, because something seems to be up with that line. It should not be ringing as busy. So, you keep the...
We'll keep the fires burning, and we will go to other sources here. Brian is calling Toronto as we speak.
Well, actually, it's Ontario, and I'm not calling them just quite yet.
Toronto's in Ontario.
Okay.
That's your geography lesson for the evening, children. Toronto's a beautiful city. Been there a couple different times when I was younger. We are calling Ed.
I need that text file open. Mortality Radio, disconnected again.
We're having troll phone problems, which, oddly enough, is not unknown whenever we have a big name on the show. Yes, Ed is in Toronto. The next lesson is getting disconnected from a major fantasy author. Now, when Bob Salvatore called in, we had similar problems. So it's just one of these things. Instead of having a train wreck with the hardware of the system, we're having a phone wreck. And yes, it's a full moon, so everything's just kind of falling down here.
All right, hold on, Andrew. Hold on. Hello? No. Who's this? Yeah, there's no mic here.
And that wasn't Ed, so if that's the three times it's called, he's not called in as yet. That was a wrong number.
All right.
We are working around the same guys who made the Mars rover. That's right. And oddly enough, we're right across the street from the phone company in Fort Myers, so it's not like we're going that far.
Find it. Publisher.tech.
And right now, Brian's on the landline to, Adlon's on the landline to his home and double-checking the number. We're going to give Ed a call.
Okay, there's two phone numbers. I need them both.
So we will continue on here. Somebody throw a topic into the room, and we'll go on, or I'll go back to reviews. Napfler, good to see you tonight.
Yeah.
We're getting more and more people in here. The show's running just a little long. We're having some phone problems, and we'll be calling him just in a moment.
All right, thanks. Bye.
So we now have the phone numbers, and we'll be dialing out. So, hopefully we should have Ed here in just a moment. So the lines crossed in the back.
I'm not going to start punching down stuff right now.
Bane phone. Good one. Good one, Drax.
And this, I just tested this line before, you know, when we got here.
Yeah. It's like, we got here early. Now, those of you who are familiar with Southwest Florida, February in Fort Myers is Tom Edison month. Thomas Edison is the, was a winter resident here, and his winter home, along with Henry Ford's and Harvey Firestone's homes. And, they're a big tourist draw here. Well, every February we have the...
Unfortunately, we're having a phone line issue. I need to give Ed an emergency...
We have the big Edison Festival of Light Parade, which is a nighttime festival. But prior to doing this, there are several festivals that go on through town. So tonight there's a block party going on just down the street. There's a couple of really cool bands, right, including the Fabulous Thunderbirds. So it's a crazy night, it's a full moon, there are lots of parties going on around town, and we use tech used during Edison's time. Not quite, but pretty close. And yes, the liquor is to blame, but we're running a call in now.
Apologies, we're having a phone line issue.
And he's.
And every time I answer that line, it just chops you. I'm going to give you an alternate line. We've got a big crowd.
We have Ed on the phone right now.
229-226.
And we're giving him the alternate line so he can call in.
And as a third alternate, change the last four digits to 0424. So either 0747 or 0424, area code 239, and the prefix is 226. We're here, sir. Alrighty. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay, so we just got off the line.
Got off the phone with Ed Greenwood. He'll be calling in about 30 seconds. He's just got to go from upstairs to downstairs. And guys, this is the same line we've had the last several guests call in on, and I have no clue what's going on with it. So, it's always something.
Yeah, and you realize how many, I didn't realize how many festivals are going on this weekend. We've got Greek Fest. We've got Shrimp Fest. We've got the block party for the Edison Festival, and it's all this weekend. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff to do down here this time of year. Those of you who are freezing your cans off in the Midwest.
Mortality Radio.
Hi, it's Greenwood.
Oh, Ed, glad to see you.
How do you do this evening, Sage?
I'm fine. I'm here snowbound in my little log cabin.
Oh, really?
And we're enjoying a balmy 84 degrees down here today.
Don't scare the guest away. Anyway, sorry about the initial technology issues, but that line's been used on many shows, and for some reason it did not want to take your call.
It doesn't like me.
Well, we certainly do, so they're
right.
Up with the phone line.
Okay. Well, let's roll.
Hey, Ed, first let everybody know where it is you're calling in from.
I'm calling in from Ontario in Canada, just north of Pennsylvania, New York State.
outside sounds kind of nippy.
Yeah, it is. There's a howling blizzard outside.
Alrighty.
Oh, that's a lot of fun.
Well, Ed, obviously, you've done interviews with other people before. We have quite a few questions. I got to ask one right off the bat that one of, actually, my staff members wanted to ask you about Elminster's pipe's name. Is it still known as Fred?
That depends on who's addressing it.
Ah.
The symbol has another name for it.
Stinky?
Mm-hmm.
Stinky?
It's not a name that teachers and for public consumption.
Ah, I gotcha.
It's more in the lines of too hot, but you know.
Alright, well, this my staffer's mother sat in a game you ran at Gen Con several years ago, and her character, which was a mage, asked Elminster if she can borrow his pipe, and then Elminster sent the PCs on a mission. Elminster agreed and told her that the pipe's name was Fred.
That is indeed correct. Elminster did. The pipe has a public name, a private name, and, like most of us, a long, formal, given name.
So basically, it's like email addresses.
Yes. The pipe is sentient in a limited sense.
Well, like you and me talked on the phone, I'm a long-time fan, having run my own campaign in the realms for 12 years. I can honestly say, as far as what's published, I know pretty much what needs to be known about the realms up through the end of 2nd edition. Which, when 3rd edition came out, new system, so I basically went with a fresh setting. And, you know, insert other reasons I talked to you about earlier on the phone the other day also, but that's neither here nor there.
As 3rd edition goes along, it's my hope, you know, as we did the Silver Marches, and I hope to do again in Serpent Kingdoms, that there will be some new lore about the realms. And, of course, you can always check out the realms or columns on the Wizards of the Coast website. They don't really need 2nd edition or 3rd edition or any edition stats. They're just background lore about the world. And then, frankly, that's an open secret about the realms. If I wasn't being edited by various people down the years at DSR and now Wizards of the Coast, there might not even be any game stats at all in the realm stuff.
Yeah, I remember when you first started appearing in Dragon Magazine, and believe me, that was some of the best stuff, and at the time I was adapting it into Greyhawk.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you see, Greyhawk was the world. I wasn't ever setting out to challenge Gary Gygax or whatever. Greyhawk was the official world of Dungeons & Dragons, and this was just my own home campaign.
Well, back in the early 80s, when your articles first started appearing and you had a regular column in Dragon, that was one of the things I looked forward to from month to month to see what you came up with next. So
I was just following along what I did in play and what my players wanted. Because if their characters were going and exploring this or that thing, I would write it up because I didn't think it was fair to throw it at them until I'd worked it all out. And then I'd show them to Kim Mohan a dragon, and he liked them, so they started publishing.
Well, I met you for the first time, and that's kind of weird that I met you for the first time this summer at Gen Con when I initially talked to you about coming on the show. And you were kind enough to autograph my City of the Spider Queen adventure, which I'd won at the Wizards booth, and that was a big highlight of the week for me. You know, both Adlon and I are big fans. Like he said, he's ran Forgotten Realm campaigns. I usually got my Forgotten Realm stuff and then either adapted it into my own world or whatever we were playing at the time, because it is that versatile and it does translate well to a lot of different settings.
The original concept for the Forgotten Realms, which is why it has the name Forgotten Realms, is that our Earth, our real world that we live in every day, is connected to a whole bunch of work. And the original Home Realms campaign was very much like that. People would walk from world to world, and that's when they realized that other critters and other intelligent beings knew all about the gates and wanted to control their use, and would therefore get after the player characters who were gleefully using these gates.
Now, I had a question that came up when they did the Forgotten Realms campaign setting that you could put on your PC and actually go into the CAD maps and whatnot.
That was the Forgotten Realms Atlas on
CD. Yeah,
the
Forgotten Realms Atlas on
CD. That's right.
They actually added two or three continents that were never, ever covered in any printed product and did not have anything that you could pull up on them.
That's right.
Were these original designs of yours, or did they put that in there for the game to round out the Earth when they put it on the CD?
I think they put them in. Those were nothing to do with me. My original world, my original realm had a continent on the far side of the world that never really saw the light of day. It never made its way into TSR's hands, and it had the Ankarome campaign, which was the campaign where you limp in your battered ship from island to island, and each island can have any dungeon that the dungeon master wanted to pick up from any published source. In those days, it would have been Judge's Guild dungeons, I would imagine, that you'd use, because there was nothing else out there. There was no D20 world, there was no dungeon adventures, and you just plonk the dungeon on the island, and if the poor player characters in their wrecked ship, they had to go ashore and get provisions, find fresh water, food, cut down a few trees and replace their masts, they'd have to go through the adventure. So there were a lot of islands out there, but nothing of that made it into the Atlas, and nothing that I saw in the Atlas that was away from the root continents was my invention. And I seem to remember looking at one of the things in the Atlas and noticing that they had an archipelago of islands and so on. It was all square. Its outlines were very square, and I just sort of went, because I would never have done it that way. But other than that, no, they aren't mine. But I would love to see more detail in the bit of the realms that we have filled in on the map yet. In fact, if I was running Wizards of the Coast, and we all do this, all gamers do this dreaming fantasy game, if I was running the gaming industry, I would do this, you know, and we all want to do slightly different things, but if I was running Wizards of the Coast, I would want to publish all sorts of bits about the realms that we haven't seen yet. Before I started changing anything, the realms, I'd be wanting to fill in all the kingdoms I haven't had a chance to do yet.
Yeah, so I definitely see and agree with your point there, because there's, you know, for every percentage that you have put out on in print, there's got to be a whole bigger stockpile just sitting there in the archives, so to speak.
Yes, but sitting in the archives is one thing. Those are faded pencil notes on hundreds of scraps of paper in hundreds of boxes in my basement. They are first edition, and they are first edition with my own variant rules and so on, and they're increasingly out of date and no longer match well with the published realms, so you would almost have to start over. Now, one of the things I've been careful to do over the years is build up notes on areas, so if anyone who's either on staff at Wizards of the Coast or is freelancing for them gives me a phone call or emails me, I have, okay, here's what I did with that area. No, so if this is any help to you, here you go. Run with it. And in that way, I'm trying to keep the realm sort of stitched loosely together. I don't mean I'm trying to control it. It's not going to be the realms that I originally envisioned and play in my home campaign. But I'm trying to keep it coherent so that it's all hanging together. And there are other people out there, fans of the realms and freelancers like Eric Boyd and George Crashos, who would do a better job of keeping the realms hanging together than I can anymore, because I am no longer I can no longer hold in my mind all the changes that other people have made when working on it. I just remember my stuff.
Like the square block in a round hole, it could be done with a hammer, but
yeah. And of course the terrible thing is whenever there's a contradiction or course, and or one writer goes off in a really different tone or direction than others, it ruins the illusion for everybody, because we're all pretending here. We're all making believe that this is real. And wherever it doesn't fit, there's a bump and sort of jolts you back and saying, oh, it's just a game. You know, it's like Alice at the end of Wonderland. Alice went out, oh, you're just a pack of cards. It sort of, you know, jolts you out of the illusion that this is a real place.
Well, that would, it's kind of like the old Thieves World series where it was a shared world adventure and they had an outline they ran from, but they weren't allowed to go too far asunder or it ceased to be Thieves World and went off into that individual author's chase.
That's right, yeah. Now, as it happens, I have one of the original Thieves World packages somewhere around this house, and it was very casual at the beginning. There was always going to be a bit of freedom. But yes, if you were keeping your characters in the sanctuary, you were sort of abiding by the ground rules. If you picked it the same way we do with the realms, if you picked up another author's character, you didn't break them, you put them back in the sandbox in as good a condition as you picked them up, unless you'd made it, come to an agreement with the author who created those characters. Like, I'm going to take character X, who is male, and cut off his arm, or cut off his eyeball, or whatever. Is that okay? Or, I'm going to take character Y, who happens to be female, and at the end of this adventure, she's going to be pregnant. Is that all right? Because it would be an awful thing if it wasn't all right.
Question for you, Ed. Obviously, Abra Toril, Faerun, were the mainstays, at least of the published version of the realms. How much input did you have with the expansions of Karatur and Maztika?
Almost nothing. When I was doing Anorak, which of course I was, by the time I was writing Anorak, I was following what Troy Denning had done in the Park C, the first Harper's novel.
Right.
So I had to sort of twist things to match what I'd done originally in my own mind for Anorak with what he'd done. And one of the things that happened in the novel, Ruha uses a lot of magic, and some of it is new, or wasn't new at the time. And when I was writing Anorak, I came up with a bunch of wind and sand magic spells, a whole bunch of them. And, of course, they wouldn't all fit. So, of course, Jeff Grubb, I was good friends with Jeff, and he was the master of the realm then, and he was starting up what they then called Arabian Adventures. And he sort of phoned me up and said, okay, what's this spell from? Okay, where's it from? Okay, And he sort of cherry-picked the spells he wanted for El Hadim. And that was it, with my involvement for El Hadim. As far as Maztika, I had no direct involvement in that at all. And although I find the idea of the guy for whom Baldur's Gate is named for being a great sea explorer and going across and finding things, that was my idea originally, I would never, if left to my own devices, have come up with something that reminds you that strongly of our, quote, real world. As in, you know, the Europeans go across and find Aztec slash Mayan slash whatever in this new continent, and it reminds you of either real history or Hollywood history. I would never have, on for my own, it just is a matter of style, because I think that ruins role playing, because people start remembering what they were taught in school or what they saw in a movie, and
they're going to pick up some contradictions naturally.
Well, yeah, but it just, they stop imagining and they start saying, wait a minute, Egyptians didn't have stirrups.
Right.
You know, and then to me it's like, no, we're not in Egypt. We're in an imaginary world. Keep thinking as a character in that world. Now, there's nothing wrong. I mean, TSR had an idea that the realms had to be the home of second edition, and therefore it had to embrace all sorts of flavors of gaming. Ancient Egypt, we had all of the people who played Judges Guild products, and the Temple of Ra, cursed by Set, and all this on. And they wanted to have the evil deity of Set and fighting him. Okay, so you needed a sort of quasi-Egyptian thing. They wanted to do
mention kind of country in the realms. Mulhorand is Egyptian in flavor, is it not?
Well, it became that way. I did not write it that way. I said to the folks at TSR, Unser and Mulhorand, they are somewhat like Egypt in climate, and they are fallen, decadent empires. Now, from that, the folks at TSR and Scott Benny, writing as a freelancer, did a marvelous job of writing a sort of quasi-Egypt. In other words, it drew on everything I'd done and then expanded it in an Egyptian direction. The end result is quite interesting, but again, you know, left to myself, I would have not done it that way, because for one thing, in the Home Realms campaign, a lot of the places around the edge of the map weren't very well detailed. I could tell you exactly what they imported and exported, and what their merchants looked like, what they wore, you know, their stature, skin color, eye color, hair color, how they spoke, because it was the merchants from the caravan and shipping merchants from afar, from these weird places that were far away on the map, whom the player characters would bump into when they were, you know, gallivanting around what Jeff later called the Heartlands, which is, you know, Cormier, the Dales, Waterdeep, and the little sort of strip linking them. Most folks never got to the edges of the realms because I was... One thing you can do as dungeon masters, you can control the gates. If you don't want them to use a gate, guess what? It doesn't work, or they can't find it. So I didn't want them to have a what later showed up as Aurora's catalog, you know, where you had a network of gates that was reliable, and you could use them for mercantile trade around the realms. I didn't want that. I wanted it to be dangerous shipping, dangerous overland caravan. I showed folks a caravan in Hand of Fire, the last Chandler novel, just so it would be an adventure. And I understand that I'm speculating on this because I haven't seen anything about the new campaign setting that Wizards is working on, but I understand that exploration is a big part of it. So again, we're getting back to that, we can explore new worlds or new areas or new territories, see what's on the edge of the map.
Back on the expansions, the Karator and the Horde, how much of that was you, or came, started, or originated with you, or was initiated by you, and how much of that was a corporate thing?
Oh, almost none of that originated with me. I had no Karator, and none of the kingdoms or names or anything like that. The names of some of the kingdoms, as you move into the Horde lands, Murgon, Zemfar, and so on, those were all mine, and they were on my maps. But I did not have anything that detailed. Now, and that much like our real world, some of the staffers who worked for TSR, Zeb Cook and Doug Niles, were either history teachers or extras. History teachers were very up on their history and wanted to do, they could do very detailed and very realistic bits of our world. And I know the book department was interested in doing the trilogy, the Horde trilogy, the Dragonwall and so on. And one of the things you'll probably notice is if you take the early Forgotten Realms books, the novels, and lay them out and look at a map of the realms, the easiest way to avoid conflicts at the beginning was to geographically separate all the authors. So, Paul Salvatore sort of says, what's north of this wall of mountains called the Spine of the World? And the folks at TSR say, well, nothing. And he goes, good, that's mine then. Wham! You know, 10 towns. Okay, Icewind Dale. That's mine. Okay, and so on and so forth. And one of the things that happened in the Horde lands was that it was right at the edge of the map and going off the edge of the map, so you could comfortably set a bunch of novels there that didn't have an effect on the rest of the realms until the actual Horde.
The Horde invasion.
Invasion, yeah. And I know that...
And that was in the 1350s, if my realms lore is correct.
That's right. And there were also plans, and you'll see them in FR7, Hall of Heroes. You'll see the characters there. And I believe it was Zeb Cook who was going to do it. And I don't know what happened there. There were plans for Oriental novels. And I also,
you could put your foot down and say, I really don't like that in the realms, what would that be?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Adlon.
I don't know if I could choose one thing, and here's the reason. There are two things that worry me. And one is just a personal preference. I would rather have a publishing program for the realms, assuming that it went on forever. You know, we're all going to be immortal in 200 years from now. We'll be, you know, looking for the new realms product for that month. I would want us to do a product that covered a bit of the realms, a geographical piece of the realms we've never seen before, and then a second product that looked back at Cormyr or Waterdeep or Silvery Moon or someplace that we'd seen before, and then a third product would go out and show us again a piece of the realms we'd never seen before, and then back to the familiar, and then, you know, out again to the zoo. And we haven't covered enough of the map for my personal preferences. There are gaps in the middle. And of course, the thing that I hated when we went for second and third edition is some of those gaps went away because the map just got, you know, modified. And I thought to myself, well, some of these great empires are now too close together for my way of thinking as a designer. Now, that also makes it more better for adventure because there's more chance there'll be conflicts between them because they're closer together. The other thing I would have done differently is I know why the Time of Troubles was introduced. That's how we, because the realms actually made it into print before the conversion from first to second edition, the way the rules changes was covered was the Time of Troubles, which was an idea that I'd first floated in Dragon 54 just to cover when you had to fix things in a campaign as a dungeon master. And it was used that way. The problem is, from then on, there have been realms novels that have the gods walking on stage all the time. I'm just as guilty of it as other writers. But the problem is, it creates an arms race. And it's, what do you do for an encore? It's, for instance, if I was trying to write a novel about growing up in America, okay, in the United States, as a young boy, it would be far more interesting if I grew up somewhere in the backwoods or somewhere on the mean streets than if I was a president, you know, a six-year-old president and grew up in the White House, you know what I mean? And if everybody in the book was rich and powerful and, you know, you're starting at the top. And for me, I think the realm has to have small stories in it, and that's what Chandra's story started out as. It got out of hand, but I always want to see small stories in the realms as well as big realm-shaking events, you know, as we call them, where the gods fight each other, and they're the weave and the shadow weave, and these sort of things are very fascinating to lots of gamers, and, you know, there are huge debates about them on the chat lists and so on, but I don't want the small stories to get lost in all the shouting. You know, it's sort of like you're reading comics and we're saving the world in every issue. It can almost get boring. Show me an issue where somebody has a romance or goes for a walk in the park and sees a wolf or something, you know, and doesn't fight the wolf. The wolf and then just look at each other and the wolf bounds away. You know, give me that breathing space. Give me something else. And, of course, when you're writing novels, you want every novel to be important and exciting. That's the nature of the beast. But I get a little uneasy as the arms race of gods goes on, because I think, what do you do for an encore? I guess we, you know, blow up a bigger section of the realms and kill some more gods, or, you know. But, no, wait a minute, there's got to be a better way of telling stories than that. So, those are the, you know, if I was doing things, those are the two things that I would do differently. Because I think if you were dealing with all the so far neglected geographical areas of the realms, you'd have tons of new stories and new characters from those areas percolating up, and you wouldn't have to use the gods all the time.
Question, Ed. Besides Elminster, who is your namesake, who is
it's going to be hard. It's a hard question for me to answer. I can only imagine the difficulty for you. Who's your favorite non-player character, type of character in the Forgotten Realms?
Oh, yeah, that is tough, because there are so many of them.
I know. I've got about 10, and I'd be hard-pressed to pick any one. Not including Elminster.
Okay. If I had to pick one, and it wasn't Elminster, it's going to come down to one of two characters at the moment. And we're talking about the published realms, the characters you've seen.
Right.
I'm also taking right out of it all of the player characters of my players. All of the Knights of Edrainer are going right out of it because they don't belong to me. They belong to the players, in my mind anyway. Okay?
Okay.
That leaves me with two in the front row. Mert, the moneylender. And you haven't really seen Mert do his stuff yet. Mert is... Well, the closest thing in literature to him is Sir John Falstaff from Shakespeare. A fat, wheezing, way past his prime, elderly, doddering, but smart. He's also a bit like Nicholas Van Ryn, the Poole Anderson's merchant character. He's pretty smart behind there, and he puts on a buffoon act. But he's sort of bumbling his way through life with his boots flopping and his belly hanging out, wheezing along there, trying to be a great adventurer. And it's sort of like, you know, the fat man playing Conan. Okay?
Yeah.
And the other one would be Storm Silverhand. And unfortunately, the way that Storm has ended up being portrayed, we get immediately into the Seven Sisters with silver hair and all this, you know, divine power and so on, and we get away from the nurturing part. And it's been very hard for me to show the nurturing part of Storm because it immediately gets confused with the sex part, because the sex part is more exciting or more saleable or more attractive or whatever. And frankly, in role-playing products, it gets to be boring to find out that, you know, Storm Silverhand went to this lady's hut and nursed her because she was sick and taught her kids things and went and caught them fish and played with them up in trees and stuff, because you're going, yeah, yeah.
We got a slight glimpse of that in Elminster Goes to the Mage Fair.
Yes. Yeah. But it's been hard to show that because it just isn't as exciting. But that's the sort of thing I want in there, because I'm trying to make the realms as balanced and as rich as possible. Let me put it another way. If all you see in a, say, a science fiction epic, let's choose Star Wars, okay? Because most people are familiar with Star Wars. In Star Wars, the way people live their lives doesn't get enough face time for a balanced gaming thing, unless game designers walk in, as Wizards of the Coast have done, and put it there, and West End Games before them, and so on. Because all you really get to see in most of the movies are the people who are raising Luke Skywalker at the beginning, you know, and a little bit of the Ewoks. You don't get to see how normal people live, because all the face time is action, and it's, you know, Star Destroyers and Stormtroopers and, you know, weapons going off and planets blowing up and, you know, and it's the Renegades, the Rogues. If we're not in the Cantina, we're on the Millennium Falcon, and you're getting to see the exciting people, the bounty hunters and adventure people, but we're not, you can't stand back from that as a designer, again, unless a game designer has gone in and done that extra work, and you've read a lot of the novels and all the extra stuff, but if you just go by what's on the screen, you don't know how these people live, you don't know how they find their food, how do they pay for things, what do they want to do in their lives, where do they want to go? Now, I mean, I understand that that isn't what you're watching it for, and that shouldn't have, but at the same time, if I'm designing a world and I want it to last for years, and hey, the Forgotten Realms has lasted since 1979 in print, and a long time before that, 67, for at least for me, in writing, I want to know everything I can about that world, and I want it as detailed as possible, and I want, you know, okay, why is this caravan going from there to there? What's it carrying? Well, if it's carrying salt or sugar, it means that there's a shortage of salt over there, and there's an abundance back where the caravan came from, or several stops back. And therefore, and I blah blah blah, I can work out all the economics and so on, and I need that detail to be there.
Yeah, I definitely see where you're going. I have a couple of more questions, me personally, and then Smog's got quite a few also, and we got some from listeners and people who posted in an Ask Ed thread I started a few days ago.
Fire away, I'm happy.
Waterdeep, yours?
Yes.
Outstanding. That Waterdeep in the north for $9.95 was so highly over-engineered. That, to me, today, to this day, is still one of the best city books ever in print.
And I can recall, when I sent it in, I warned TSR, I said, you know, this isn't three buildings or eight buildings, this is a city. And I sent in the map, and they taped it together, and they couldn't get to the washroom for a day. Because it filled the floor all taped together. And one of the commandments that came out of that was, thou shalt not use any more mouse type in products. And that commandment was there because I just kept sending the stuff. And Jeff would say, you know, Ed, this is only 64 pages. And I'd say, but Jeff, we haven't covered the sewers yet. You know, I mean, these people will be, they will have died in their own shit years ago if we don't, like, you know, work out how the water comes in and the waste goes out.
Yep.
And this is part of a city. You got to have it there. And to which he fully agreed. But, you see, again, to play the old, if I was running TSR game, I would have taken what you got in City System, the box, and I would have thrown Waterdeep in the north and Volo's Guide to Waterdeep in it. And that would have been one product.
Right.
Okay? Now, the second time around, when we did City of Splendors, I think Steve Shen did an absolutely amazing job of squeezing the court into the pint plot. And even so, I look at that product and say, there's all these things missing. And I'm sure if I was a gaming company executive, I'd be going, oh my gosh, there's way too much in there. You know? But I mean, from my point of view, Elaine Cunningham and I are writing the novel Waterdeep right now, and we're still hitting new stuff. You know, we're having these neat little discussions. Okay, what if? Okay, we haven't covered that. Never mind, here's the short story. Okay, marvelous. We'll add this. Okay, now what happens when you run into a watch patrol? How do they speak to you? Like, if they're suspicious of you, they're not going to attack you, but they're just suspicious. What are you doing on this street at this time of night, holding that thing? How do they, you know, how do they come across? You know, how do they speak to you? I mean, they're not getting out of a cruiser with flashing lights. What are they doing? You know, that's the sort of detail we have to keep adding. And, I love Waterdeep. But, you see, at the same time, there are people at Wizards who will say, oh, we don't want to do Waterdeep again. I mean, and at the same time, I agree with them because I'm going, yeah, we haven't done Cormyr properly yet, and we haven't really done Silvery Moon properly yet. We didn't have enough space in the Silver Marches, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and I would say blah, 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 because there are another six or eight cities that I want to be detailed just as much.
Right.
And the city in Zambia, you know, please, give me one. One in Orm, Azcatla. Give me that, with that detail. Neverwinter. You know, Neverwinter exists in this sort of weird, you know, the computer games add this, this, and this. And because the computer games are there, we really don't talk about it.
I gotcha.
You know, and then there's all these places in the realms I want to detail. I mean, to put it in real world terms, if you came from Atlanta, boy, would you get tired of reading book after book after book about New York. You'd say, well, what about, you know, Atlanta? and there are all these other cities in the realms I want to cover.
Yep. Cormyr, yours?
Yes.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
That's where I based my campaign out of, Evening Star to be precise.
And Evening Star is where the Knights of Mithranor started too.
Yep. And wasn't their first undertaking were the infamous Haunted Halls, or one of their first undertakings.
Yeah, and the Haunted Halls is another example of how I didn't know how to write for a gaming company. And there was another miscommunication. I thought I had 96 pages to work with, and I didn't know that in second edition, each monster had to have a full page right up, instead of, you know, a paragraph.
Right.
And I suddenly discovered that I had no space for anything, and there I was on the phone pleading with Zeb Cook, who'd been left in charge of that realm's product at that time because somebody else was off
laid out Caverns of the Claws.
Yeah.
I actually made my own ad hoc dungeon for that.
Sure, yeah, of course. You had to, after it wasn't in the... But, you know, from my point of view, I'm not a very good adventure designer. I am a campaign builder. And what I was trying to do in almost every product, and officially trying to do when I did the one set out in the Moon Chase, I was trying to give you a sort of basis for a campaign. And the reason for that is, in the original Realms campaign, we rarely had, except for those little one or two room dungeons that were done in an evening, we rarely had linear adventures. What we had is about 40 subplots going on at the same time. So sort of like a really involved television sitcom with recurring characters and gag lines. You know, I'm Daryl, my brother, other brother Daryl. You know, people would come on, would keep coming back into the adventure because they lived locally. And all this stuff would be going on. And in fact, if you look at first edition Dungeons & Dragons, you have to have all that stuff there because every player character is looking for a tutor to go up a level. And they're having to do things for the tutor. Like, you know, get me a pink flamingo and the lost tome of Zolblob. And then I'll train you. So off you go looking for the pink flamingo.
Right.
And you're having to have all these side adventures. And in the original Realms, quite often we'd never draw a weapon all evening. Or the characters would never draw a weapon. In 4 or 5 hours of kibitzing and so on, we'd just be role-playing. We'd be talking to people, bluffing people, going and asking questions of people, spying on people, you know, and there would be very little fighting.
Okay, my third question, and then Smog's going to have his shot at you.
Sure.
Cormier, is there, and I know you can probably only elaborate on this so far, do you foresee the possibility of stability again in that nation?
Yes and no.
Let me rephrase, political stability.
Yes and no.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is, Cormier is one of the strongest monarchies, administrative kingdoms that we have in the realms, okay? But what we're trying to do in the published Forgotten Realms is always give you maximum play opportunities. And it's the most interesting place to play if there's always levels intriguing, incipient civil war, danger in the Stone Lands, who knows what's going to happen, you know? And if you read Elminster's Daughter when it comes out, you'll see a few more hints of this. To put it in real-world terms, the United States is a large and interesting country, but it's an awful lot more interesting when political parties are at each other's throats and there's a big ruckus. It's not more fun to live in, but it's more interesting to live in, right? So in the same way, Cormier could very easily have political stability, but I predict that, you know, being as we all want to have fun play sessions there and other places, that stability is going to be a long time in coming. For one thing, the problem Cormier has is Sembia. Sembia is sitting right beside it with a whole bunch of Sembians with far more money, far more greed and ambition than they should have, and far more time on their hands than they should have. They can't resist
I think there was plenty of intrigue and other options for gaming in Cormyr with the king still running the show. That's me personally, though.
Sure. I mean, I could tell you endless stories, or write endless short stories of Glorastor Rolligan, you know, the sort of rogue agent doing his sort of James Bond thing.
You know, you have all the intrigue with all the noble houses. You know, the Wyvern Spurs had fall from grace issues.
Yeah.
I mean, it was endless, but yet the kingdom itself represented a bastion of hope and peace and serenity, but...
And in fact, from my point of view, there's where I put my finger on another design flaw. I never yet had the opportunity to detail even half the noble families.
Yeah.
And we only remember the names of a few of them. And I tossed a whole bunch of them into Death of the Dragon, so you could see them die in front of your eyes in five seconds, you know. Oh, and I am the scion of the House of Miramahula. You know?
Yeah.
My friend goes in the next one.
And he gets roasted.
Yeah, and you think, my God, a lot of people are dying. And that's what I wanted you to think. I wanted you to go, my God, these people are dying for their country. They're weeping as they die, but they're dying because it's the honorable thing to do. It's a pretty cool country.
It's the fall of Camelot.
Yes, yeah.
Last thing I want to say before Smog takes you over for a little bit, Ed. Spellfire, definitely my favorite novel by you.
Oh, thank you.
That is an introduction to the Forgotten Realms like no other.
Yeah, and that's what I designed it to be. I know some people hate Spellfire itself as being too powerful, and I agree with them. It is too powerful for a campaign. I never meant it to be in roleplay. I just needed an excuse to keep this naive little girl, you know, who wants to run away and have adventures and be careful what you ask for. You know, she gets it. I needed something that not only could she keep herself alive by literally blowing anything away, you know, a beholder, wham, gone.
Yep.
A castle full of Zendrim, wham, gone. You know, not only could keep her alive, but it was so powerful that evil NPC power groups and all the good guys of the realms, like Elminster and Song, would come running in all directions because I needed Spellfire to be your introduction to the realms and bring all these people on stage so you know what they walk and talk like. And so it worked that way, but as a novel, it didn't work so well.
Well, so it didn't win a Pulitzer Prize or anything, but you know what? I look at that book and I compare it to the movie Destroy All Monsters. If you were a monster movie fan back in the 70s when they were popular, you got in Destroy All Monsters, you had Gamera, Godzilla, King Kong, Rodan, Ghidra, and however many other ones. Well, here in Spellfire, you've got, let's see, you got several races covered, several organizations covered, several different types of creatures covered. The battle with the Draco Lich was classic.
Yeah.
You got introduced to Mithdranor, although a lot of the draw of what Mithdranor truly was didn't come out till really the box set. Now, of course, I'm talking the published stuff now. That's when Mithdranor really came to its own, is when it had its own box set, which I personally love the box set, but I'll tell you, I'm going to turn it over to Smog, but that's my favorite book by Ed.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, for me, Jeff Grubb phoned me up and said, we need you to do a novel. Show us the realms. So I needed an excuse to bring just about everybody in the realms on stage and show them to you. I think it works for that, so thank you very much.
Around the realms in 80 days.
Yeah.
Ed, watch your time, because you're going to go quite a bit later than most of our guests, only because you are very popular and you got a lot of fans here tonight.
That's okay with you, that's okay with me. You just tell me when we're out of time and tell me when to shut up and I'll go away.
Alright, well, I'm a little conscientious about your phone call, so you watch your time too, and, you know, here's Smog.
Sure.
Thank you, Ed, I'll be back in a bit.
Okay.
He's running out to take his nicotine break. I'm gonna take a swerve here. We're gonna break away from the realms for just a moment to get into what you're doing currently. And I'm looking at the Fast Forward Games website, and let's get some thoughts about Castlemourne.
Yeah. Born is going to be great fun. It's going to be another old campaign setting. Slightly smaller in compass when you first see it than the Realms. Okay? It's going to be a series of lands or kingdoms encircled on three sides by mountains, facing a bay. And then there's a string of islands that sort of form a the rest of the circle is a sort of breakwater out in the bay. And then there are areas to the east and west known as East Mist and West Mist, where the Dungeon Master can put anything he wants, any weird adventures he wants, because those are treacherous waters, and if you sail into them, you may or may not come back. And Castleborn is a setting with a history. It has a whole bunch of mysteries in it, things for the players who are running characters through it to figure out. There's things about the past and fallen magic, and there's these ruined castles here and there, hence the name. And these castles are crammed full of magic, and of course they are, if you wish them to be, you know, mega dungeons. And I know Jim Ward asked me to do this, and I said, oh, goody, here's a chance to, like, you know, do all the stuff that at the moment there isn't room for me to do in the Realms, because I'm not getting the chance to do new products in the Realms that show you a new kingdom here and a new kingdom there. So here's a chance to do new kingdoms, new world building. I get to do the music, the coins they have in their pockets, how they travel on roads, how the trade goes, and I get to pull in one of everything again. We have haughty nobles in one place, we have a whole shore full of outlaws and stuff. We have all sorts of idiosyncratic folk living out on the various islands who do their own thing and don't much like strangers. We have the usual sly-tongued merchants running all over the world making a buck by buying something cheap here and selling it more expensive over there. We have monarchies. We have all sorts of weird kingdoms that are different one from the other, and have each one of them has a mystery you're going to have to solve. And I understand that the first book is going to be, I think, a 192-page hardcover, and coming out pretty soon. And it's going to have, as most D20 things have, some new prestige classes, new monsters, new magic items. But the main thing is it gives you a new world to play in. And if you're starting a campaign now and you don't want to take on the baggage of the Realms or Dragonlance or Greyhawk or any of the established settings that have huge sweeping story arcs already going on, where you might have to buy tons of stuff to come up to speed on it, it's a new world that you can sort of play in. And I understand there are plans for a board game, plans for novels, and I hope it all comes to happen. I'm not saying this because, oh boy, I'll be rich, because as you probably have found out by now, not too many people get rich in 20 games.
Right.
I just think it's a new place to play. It's more fun. It's sort of like, gee, I built a new sandbox. Come into my yard and let's play. Now it's like, hey, here's another sandbox.
You have a little bit more control over this than what's in the Realms then.
At the outset, yeah, but I want people to do their own thing. So, yes and no. Yeah, to start with, the world is starting out fast as I see it, as I saw it when I wrote all the stuff down. Now, from that, the good folks at Castleborn, Fast Forward, Jim Ward in particular, but I know Sean Everett did some work on this. They have an intern who did some work on this. They were all turning my stuff into third edition. Okay, because I tell you right now, almost everything I handed over had little or no stats. I might use, Jeff Grubb and I years ago came up with a shorthand, which first got used in Forgotten Realms Adventures for describing characters, because we didn't want to waste the space on writing out stats. So we'd say, you know, Joe Blow is a W-12, you know, an NG, AGM, W-12.
I love those old stat blocks.
Yeah, neutral good, human male, wizard 12. Now can we get on with describing his, you know, what he does for a living and what he wants to get in life? I could care less about his stats. Where smart if you bought the thing. Go, hey, I paid all this money for this thing, and they didn't put the stats in. And I know we were talking earlier about Mr. Enter, and some people complained about Mr. Enter's box set in the same way they complained about Undermount. Hey, not every room is detailed. There's a whole bunch of stuff missing. Well, yeah. The design philosophy was, here's the sandbox. Here's some cool toys buried in the sand. Now, there's a lot of sand over there. You can put your own cool toys in. And in the same way, Castle Morn is a setting that gives you a big sandbox, a big playground. And I know that Jim has plans to bring out follow-up products that will detail, I think, a city, maybe one of the ruined castles, you know. But you get a new sandbox. That's what it's about. And I'm really excited about it. And I think it's going to be good fun. I would hope that it, you know, grows into a huge line of products that, like the Realms, that lasts for 20-odd years and, you know, makes hundreds of millions of dollars for everybody. And you know, I will be driven in a chauffeur-driven limousine up to Jim Ward's castle. You know, you can buy Lake Geneva, tear it down, put a castle up. That'd be cool. And another one for Tim Brown next door, another one for John Danner, which that'd be neat. You know, and to think that I had a hand in that would be, you know, double neat, but I don't somehow think it's going to be that popular, but it would be nice if people used it, bought it, enjoyed it, and used it. Because after all, for me, that's what it's really about. It's sort of like, I get really tickled that, hey, somebody's using my stuff. It's really neat. And I still remember the first time I went to Gen Con, and at that time, let's see, Gen Con 8, and I was getting to meet all these great gods of gaming. And then my next Gen Con was Gen Con 13. And by then, I had stuff published in Dragon, and it was really neat to walk through the aisles of University of Wisconsin Parkside and see people gaming using my articles, like with their issues of Dragon open in front of them, and arguing about, oh, wait, this is a cool thing. What do you think he meant? And I'm standing there behind them going, oh, do I tell them? Oh, gee, it's neat. Never thought of that. No, but I thought it was really cool.
Well, I miss those days. I was a big gap between University of Wisconsin. I totally missed Milwaukee altogether. And
oh, all those restaurants, all that artery hardening cheese and beer and bratwurst, poppers. Oh,
I'm in line already.
So, do you play or do you only DM?
I do both.
And so, your favorite character to class to play would be.
In first edition, bards. In second and third, I really don't have a preference. The main thing that I don't want to play, unless I fully understand the setting, is a cleric or priest. I need to know not just what the god is, but I need to know how the priesthood behaves. And of course, that's one of the things that we haven't. One of the holes we haven't filled in the Forgotten Realms yet frustrated actors, but it's just, it can be great fun with friends who you do it with on a regular basis. And you can have fun playing that character. It doesn't really matter what the class of the character is. It's what the character is doing with other characters, what they're achieving in life, you know. Have they found the long-lost thing, you know, in Princess Bride, the character played by Manny Patinkin, you know, and one day I will find that Sixth a good man, and I will say to him, you know, he had a thing for revenge that was driving his life, and your character in a good role-playing campaign will have goals or be drifting trying to find them, and that I find most cool.
Okay, we're going to move to a couple of questions from some of the listeners. We've got Anna Dobrit, who's one of the mappers that is floating around the D20 worlds. When you create a setting, do you start with a specific location or create the entire world first and then work downward?
Both. And the reason I say that both is I usually start with an image imagined in my mind of something, and that image is going to be a small space or place. It's going to be a small location. In the movie Excalibur, the lake that the lady's hand comes up with the sword in, or the stone that the sword is stuck in, okay, is in a tiny little location. And in my mind, I'm imagining what is around that location, like, you know, beautiful woods, whatever. Okay, and that's the sort of thing that is firing my imagination for that area. Okay, so I have a wooded kingdom, sort of, you know, temperate, you know, well, we're sort of in merry old England-y, King Arthur, Okay, so I have that concept. And then, from that concept, I immediately step back and say, okay, what is going to be happening in that setting? Is there going to be lots of caravans or ship travel along the shore? Or is it going to be a land of war? What? And if so, after I make those decisions, it then tells me, okay, so that means I have to have, for instance, if it's a land of war, I have to have opposing forces, either in the same country fighting over things, or perhaps it's a racial thing between humans and non-humans, or different groups of humans, or perhaps it's between two kingdoms. Okay, I have to have those opposing forces arrayed. If it's merchant travel and trade, okay, obviously, okay, there has to be a flow of goods for a reason. You know, and therefore, you then can sort of jot down, like you can take a blotter and draw an oval here and say, rich kingdom, lots of gold, needs food. And you put a few more ovals over here and you go, backwards barbarian kingdom, but boy, does the food grow. I mean, it falls off the trees. So, you know, intrepid guys have to go out and gather it without getting killed by the barbarian whatevers. Okay, and I start linking these, and I can say, okay, then I already know from having done this many times that there are some things that encourage an adventure setting. For instance, having a bunch of city-states or kingdoms or realms around a bay or around a fjord, if you want, will make for play possibilities because things can be close together and yet you can't just march across the water unless you have that spell. You can't march across the water to them. You have to sail. Okay, that makes the water, control of the water, of strategic importance. Okay, now you're going to have shipping plying it. Okay, piracy, and from there it
Avalon changed my page, so I lost my place in my questions here. let's see here.
Only the game designer does make something up.
Are your band of four novels likely to become a D20 product?
There were plans for that. There might be yet again. At the moment, I'm not writing one, though.
Okay. I'd actually forgotten about that series. When I worked at Walden Books, I did read the first two novels. I really did enjoy them.
They're fun. And again, I was focusing in on a river valley, a smaller thing than the realm, so I could detail it more. And yes, all the way through it, I developed notes. So the Dwarindim, the magical stones, I have, I think, 8 pages of all the powers that they have. Everything. And of course, there's powers that will only manifest in combination. I have the stone in my left hand and the stone in my right hand. Okay, now I can do something else, that like the Rod of Seven Parts, that I can't do with just one of them, or with the wrong combination of them. So I have tons of notes about that. So I could sit down and do a D20 product. The problem in my life is what it has always been since about 1986, when things took off. Time. There's always more novels to write, and I love writing novels. Game products take a lot longer to do, because they're almost like writing legal case law and checking against everybody else has already done stuff. You're checking against the rule system. And in many cases, in these days, the way that a game product is written, for instance, with Wizards of the Coast, you're writing it with other people. That can make a much better game product, because they can catch all your sloppiness and mistakes, and hopefully you can catch theirs, but it slows it down. You are having to spend that time in emailing or phoning or writing or mailing or FedExing stuff back and forth to each other. So it takes longer, and I don't know if I'll have time in the near future to do a D20 product. I have to eat, so I do have to have some stuff that I'm doing that earns money, and as a result, my schedule is crammed full, and you have to wait a while for holes in it. But yeah, I would love to do a neat little gaming product that laid out a Glurda, and with a little bit of the world around it, but really focused on a Glurda, tell you what all the baronies are or have been in the past. Now, the one difficulty with that is it sort of ties my hands as a writer, and I do have plans for more Glurda books going back into the past, and some in the future. I have, you know, tons of plans, but what I'll get to do next, I don't know. But if I do a D20 product, it does sort of nail things down and detail them in full. So that's the one drawback. It can make it harder to do other things in the future, because there have been times in the middle of the Glurda books where I said, hey, wait a minute, what if? Oh! So I, and, you know, you read the first two? Well, rather than the latter half, the end of the third book, I was going, hey, wait a minute, what if I, so I quickly pulled down the first two books, read through them, and said, aha, yeah, I can do that, I didn't contradict it, you know, I can add this thing, so I did, and that'll be harder to do once I do a D20 product. I would love to do a D20 product, because I think it would be a really cool gaming setting.
Well, you could probably just, you know, like you did with the Realms, just take it a few hundred leagues away from your Castlemorn and put it over in another place.
Yeah, sure. I mean, probably all the gaming companies involved would hate to have me say this, but, you know, once you've got magical gates or portals, if you use the third edition term, it's, why can't you use them all together? You know, just consider that Castlemorn is one gate over from the Realms, is one gate over from Greyhawk, is one gate over from Dragonlance. Again, you have to decide, do I want to step into the middle of Kryn at the moment with whatever's going on? Yes, no, maybe. but yeah, why not use them together?
Now, I've got a couple of questions. They kind of tie together, so let me get them both out. Is there any chance for an Ed Greenwood webpage, and what is your opinion of places like CandleKeep.com?
I would love to have a webpage. Over the years, many people have offered to do one for me or host one for me, including two of my original players. Also, at one point, Alex Von Thorn, who did the superb
mean to cut you off right there, but I'm going to email you about that.
Okay.
I have a definite solution where you don't need a web designer.
Okay.
And I'll email you more details, and I think you'll like what I put in that email, but back to you.
Okay, and as for the second half of it, Candlekeep, I think the forums for fans of any setting are a great thing, because people who are new to the setting can ask a question, and, you know, someone will always say, oh, that was covered, or, oh, yeah, that was in such and such a product, or, we discussed that before, and here it is in the archives, or whatever, that's great.
Did some work for Gary Gygax that way, and that's pretty much how I met him. Was I'd actually met him at Gen Con and gotten his autograph, but when I was doing work for him, it was when I was chatting with him on his Legendary Adventures website.
EdGreenwood.com is registered to him.
Yes, he's, remember I said at the beginning, one of my players, a couple of my players at various times offered to do it. Well, one of the first things he did was grab that and sit on it.
All right, I'll address more of that in the email to you.
Okay.
All right. Avon Butts out again.
He train wrecks me several times during the show. This is nothing new.
I'm just multitasking, that's all.
Yeah, you notice how you just multitask, like your mother and your grandmother, always just multitask, but now that this guy's doing it, we have a cool name for it.
Yeah, that's right. Now, one of the listeners on our message board writes, Elminster bears a strong resemblance to Gandalf, either gray or white, both in appearance and behavior. Was Gandalf the chief source of inspiration for Elminster? And the follow-up to that is, do you also see other incarnations of Gandalf in other pieces of literature, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, Dumbledore, Fizban, or is there just always a wise old wizard that has always existed?
Yeah, the wise old wizard is much older than Tolkien. The wise old wizard is Merlin. And Merlin was more my inspiration for Elminster. In fact, if you want to play Elminster the way I normally play him at the gaming table, rent the movie Excalibur, look at Nicole Williamson's Merlin, change the red hair to white, take away the skull cap and the earring, keep the English accent, and you have Elminster. Why is the doom of men that they forget? And so on. Well, I don't foresee this. No, that's Elminster, okay? Now, Elminster has a hawk nose. We didn't see a Gandalf with a big nose until the movies. And even then, Ian McKellen's nose is not a hawk beak. It's just large. If you wanted to sort of draw Elminster as a character in literature, I see a ring of crotchety wizards. Gandalf over here, Merlin over there, Belgarath from David Eddings' Belgariad trilogy over there, Elminster over here. They're all sort of different approaches to the same thing. You see, I needed Elminster to be very powerful, the sort of guy who can take a licking and just sort of say, oh, is that the best you can do? Oh dear, this is going to be shorter than I thought it was going to be. You know, your evil character, your red wizard, your Zentrum, blasts him with a meteor swarm and he goes, oh dear, I singed the end of my beard. Well, what am I going to say? Oh dear, I'm finished, you know, sort of thing, and then still be there. So you can then use him as the all-seeing narrator and the guide to your player characters. If you'd found the secret doors for your rune's back, it'd be just fine, but as it is, I'm afraid you're caught in the death trap and you're all just going to have to die. Oh dear, have a nice day, goodbye. No, that would be Elminster, and at the same time, he has to be unreliable, frustrating, because otherwise, when you're playing Dungeons & Dragons, the player characters
pipe.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess they never grew up in a country town or visited an old farm town where every third or fourth guy had white hair, crotchety, and a pipe. They all looked different from each other, and they all knew themselves from each other, but, you know, they were all around. Anyway.
Now, this is one of my questions. With all the different campaign settings that have floated around since D20 came out, which one do you like?
I don't know, because I haven't seen them all. Up here where I live in rural Canada, the D20 explosion coincided with the collapse of the local hobby shops. So, I haven't gotten to see everything. When I go to Gen Con, people have probably noticed that I'm sort of well-bagged, huffing and puffing my way around the increasingly large exhibit hall. I'm trying to buy stuff and not miss anything. I managed to pick up a copy of Money Cook's Arcana Unearthed. I love the new version of Call of Cthulhu that sort of pulled together all the Tommy guns and so on and told you all about them and their history. And I was intrigued by things like Redhurst and so on, but I haven't really had a chance to delve into it. I love the Dying Earth role-playing game because I love the Jack Vance stuff, and it beautifully captures that mood. But I haven't really had a chance to read through everything or even pick up everything yet. You know, I haven't seen a lot of the D20 stuff. I have to admit that one of the things I do when I get an issue of Dungeon or of Dragon is flip through, and for the first time in my life, I'm really paying attention to the ads because I'm like, oh, what is all this stuff? When do I get to see it? And I'm also intrigued by the story, always. So I'm looking at things like Phil Folklore's Girl Genius and going, oh, wow, would that be a cool setting to play in? And his earlier ones, Buck Godot and so on, and I'm going, ah, this is neat, cool, cool, cool. But I can't say that I've managed to grab every D20 thing. There's still things I'm on the lookout for. For instance, I've grabbed the GURPS Discworld and so on and read them for great interest, and I read them the same way I read the Witchworld ones, but I haven't had a chance to, since the recent proliferation of D20, to sort of see everything. Now, I can tell you exactly what will be the best D20 setting in like a month or so. Castlemore, of course! But I can't give you an honest answer because I haven't seen everything yet. One of the things I dream of doing, and my wife will hate me when I say this because, you know, the car groans under the weight of all the stuff I buy anyway, is to show up at Gen Con and somehow wear a mask or disguise myself so no one recognizes me so I can actually get 3 or 4 hours of walking around the exhibit hall without being interrupted so that I can buy stuff. Then maybe I can give you a better answer.
Okay, one last question here.
Yeah, this will be our last question for tonight, Ed.
And you're probably going to know who this came from once I ask it, and I'm going to keep him anonymous at the moment, and since he just signed back onto the chat page, he'll know that I asked the question.
Okay.
How many boobs have you signed?
Female?
Yeah, that kind.
I have to admit that I long since lost track. Just off the top of my head, and okay, let's leave out Stockholm and Hanover and Australia. Okay, let's just confine ourselves to the continental U.S. of A. How's that?
Okay.
I'm losing track around 12. Okay. But they were all of age, and I kept my fingers on the pen. How's that?
Okay.
if people want me to sign their body parts, and I'm not actually breaking any laws in that state, why not? If it's what they want me to do, hey, they paid to come to the convention. You know, it took them time and money. If they're delighted by it, I'm delighted by it, too.
You're a fan's fan, aren't you?
Yeah!
There you go.
I'm a gamer. You know, and then there's a tiny little white-eyed guy in front of me when I'm doing something like that, for instance, that goes, wow, I hit the big time. Thank you very much.
Ed, I can't thank you enough for
for spending this amount of time with us. I did forewarn you that the interview would go 45 minutes to an hour. We've broken up way past that.
It's been a pleasure.
And I definitely appreciate the extra time, and not to leave out the actual your willingness to be on the show.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's really delightful to talk gaming anytime.
We want to have you back on. It was a lot of fun having you on our golden show. This is our 50th show.
Congratulations.
And it's always a pleasure to have, you know, one of, as you put it, the gods of gaming on our show. And, you know, we try to space you guys out. We had Margaret Weiss in August, which I missed. And then we had Bob Salvatore in October. So, you know, we've had Monty Cook
on. Two Monty Cooks.
So
Monty Cooks?
Oh, please. One's enough, isn't it?
But no. We
love Monty here. And, yeah,
I have to buy more stuff. You realize there are two of them.
Yeah. There must be for some of the work he puts out. But,
yeah, he's probably due to be back on again, and since I'm the one doing the booking, I need to get a hold of him and schedule him again. Hopefully we'll have you on again, and I look forward to seeing you again this summer at Gen Con.
Ed Stark was another big show.
Yeah, so, you know, we get a lot of the big names in. We've had Jim Butler on, we've had Jim Ward on.
And you see, for me, that's the real attraction of gaming. Getting to know all these guys and girls as friends, you know.
Some of the comments in the chat room, Ed, it looks like you actually have a couple of new fans.
Oh, cool.
So
great.
People who might have been on the edge, you pushed them over.
Especially after you told them you signed boobs. It was like a landslide.
Uh-oh. Okay, now I'm going to have trouble getting through customs. Okay, guys, thanks.
Ed, we're definitely going to do this again, and I'm going to email you this weekend with an idea I got.
Okay.
I'll throw it out. We'll see what sticks to the wall.
There's also a comment for you to check your email tonight.
Okay.
And it comes from one of the folks in the business, not just one of the fans, the editor of D20 Zines and Steve Creech from Bastion Press. So check your email tonight.
Okay.
So, message passed, Steve.
Thank you.
So, we're glad to have you on. Stay bundled up. You know, like I said, we're enjoying a nice warm night here in Southwest Florida, so.
Now, Ed, we have a lot of requests for your email address, which we're going to leave those go.
Okay, tell you what. If somebody really wants to ask me something, put it on Candlekeep.
There you go.
And I will ask someone to sort of do a scan, and you know, I can send answers. How's that?
That's fine.
Okay.
So everybody, if you want to approach Ed Greenwood, and his biggest thing is that he's just that busy, so that's why he's not like open ground here. But you can reach him. Go post on the forums at Candlekeep. For those of you who have not been there, it's a very nice site, and they have got all kinds of Realms lore galore there, and I cooperate with them very often. We do link exchanges and news exchanges, stuff like that, so they're a great bunch of guys down there.
And I also, you know, the Realms list is the other place, and for people who want creative stuff, DMing stuff, that's one thing that there's more room to post than on Candlekeep, the Realms list.
Right. So, Ed, big time thank you again. And please say thank you to the missus, too, for tolerating the phone calls.
Oh, no problem.
And the relaying of messages and stuff like that.
I will do that.
And when you talk to John Danovich, relay my thanks to him for connecting the two of us up so we can get the show going.
I will do. Yeah, and boy, am I looking forward to that Castle Morn. I'm still a young gamer. You know, when that thing comes into my hands, I'll be going, oh, wow, look at this.
I'm looking forward to it, too. You know, I also write reviews for both Mortality and D20 Zines, so I'm looking forward to getting my hands on it so I can review it for you.
Okay. Thanks. Great. And, oh, yeah, and of course I'm supposed to plug all the other stuff, Silent House, the Kenzer stuff, da-da-da.
There you go. Yeah, actually someone did want you to comment on Genevieve.
Genevieve?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, you know, I got a chance to do a city. It was really cool because it just kept going. And Brian Jockey just kept saying, cool, we'll take it. That's cool. So, as you can see, you've got a phone book.
If you get the chance to stream the show we did with Kenzer Co., listen to it, because that was one of the wildest shows we've had.
And right.
They were a lot of fun. There were, what, three people on the phone?
Yeah, they have a conference call, and these guys were out to have fun that night.
Yeah, it was a flea circus, and we weren't even the ringmasters, so...
yes, I know what that says. Well, that's what gaming's supposed to be about.
So we will let you get on with your evening, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show. We're going to do this again hopefully soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thanks.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Good night, Ed. Ed Greenwood, creator of the Forgotten Realms campaign setting. And
among other things.
And the human real-life incarnation of Elminster, the sage slash mage. Guys, we're going to take a very short break, and we're going to come back. We've got a behind-the-screen contest. The winner is in the room. We got his topic. We're going to open the phones for a few minutes for some call-ins, and then we're going to go home. So,
That's right. No more poopage.
Yeah, poopage is done.
We need to come up with a new one.
Yeah,
so
that was cute for last year, but...
It's 2004.
Anyway, guys, we're going to take a short song break, and we've got some prizes to give away. We'll see you in a bit. Alright, well that was goofy, so we'll have to pick another song.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. There are fairy flowers of yellow and green, towering over your head. Look for the girl with the star in her eyes, and she's gone. Lucy. In the sky. eat marshmallow pies. Everyone smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you. Train in a station with plasticine pauses with looking glass ties. Suddenly someone is there at the turnstile. The girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
We're not being heard?
No, we're back. Sorry about that. Uh-oh.
because I clicked it. It didn't go.
Yep. Well, if we were perfect, we'd be making money at this. So, all right, guys, we're going to go right into our behind-the-screen segment.
Our winner is in the room.
Our winner is here. And, you know, those of you who are posting topics to try to win, remember, you have to be here to win. So if we happen to pick a topic, we pick the topic first.
So we're going to...
And, so we pick the topic before we look and see who's in the room. Now, as it is, tonight's winner is here. But we had a close second for tonight who wasn't here. So anyway.
So our winner tonight
is D-Dill.
And his question is, and after I read the question, Adeline's going to post the number in the room. How much investment do you make for your campaign as far as miniatures and terrain?
I'm going to clean that question up a little bit.
It needs a couple more verbs in it. How much investment do you make for your campaign as far as miniatures and terrain?
That needed just fine.
It needed a pronoun.
Okay. That's a pronoun, huh?
Yeah.
Got an adjective going instead.
It was a late night. Yeah, I know all about those. He goes on to say, I spend a good deal of time to find just the right miniature, painting it for his games, and while doing so, sometimes he'll find a miniature or terrain piece that inspires him to find a way to include it into an adventure. For example, the Reaper's miniature Tonga, the Gorilla Man Gladiator. Who wouldn't find a reason to use it in their campaign?
Well, that's a real picky subject, at least for me. I've said before on previous shows, my terrain is a battle mat with multicolor wet erase pens. So if I need the trees, I do them in green. I mean, you know, water's blue, etc., and so on. What I do for my figs is I am buying the Wizards of the Coast figs. And I have my original group of figs, which are a set of plastic Warhammer goblins that are unpainted, are still unpainted. Basically, more so than the realism of the fig, we need something there representing a medium creature, a large creature, etc. Am I right? Nope, nobody's right, nobody's wrong with this, but I'm not going to spend a fortune on figs. I highly commend those people who have the time to sit and paint their figs. They buy the nice LEDs, Reaper Miniatures or some of the other fig companies out there, but I just do not have the time myself. What do you do?
Well, I don't use figs in my game pretty much. I'm like you. I use a battle map and draw it out. Before that, it was graph paper and one of the players mapped to my descriptions. Now, Weird Uncle Rufus, he uses miniature. We supplied a miniature of our own figure, and he got one of those great big rollout Chessic battle maps, and he draws it out with dry erase marker, and we place our figures in our marching order, and then he uses those little foam squares or whatever for whatever creature it is. Unless I happen to personally have a miniature that is the creature that he's using. So since he's using the Scarglands, I don't have a lot of those kind of figures. But, you know, if we happen to run into a Black Dragon, well, I've got Black Dragon miniatures, or a Treant, I've got Treant miniatures. I mean, I've got probably close to, I don't know, maybe 2,500 miniatures that I've been collecting since the late 70s, and, you know, they're all hand-painted, and they're in my china cabinet, and so, you know, if we need something, and it's something I have, well, I'll put it on the table, but for the most part, it doesn't. So I don't use miniatures as far as gaming because, you know, I was not into that whole battle system and the big terrain, and I don't have that kind of space or money to do that kind of stuff. So, you know, doing it on paper was the way I started it back in the 70s, and that's the way I've been doing it all along, and don't have any more problem with that. So, that's pretty much how I go. I do buy miniatures. I like miniatures. I like to sit down and detail miniatures, but I don't really use it. So we're going to put this open for a couple of calls. To call in to win. Should we tell him what he's won?
Yeah, we'll tell him what he won. Okay, D-Dell.
You have won
a copy of Rack and Ruin, which is an Oathbound source book written by Darren Drader and Greg Dent. And I'll basically give you a little rundown here. The bulk of the city of Penance is madly stacked and sprawling ruin. It's one of the main cities there. I'm glad you like it. If you're not totally into Oathbound, you're going to start now. And it is a fantastic campaign setting. Think Planescape on crack, basically. It's Planescape feel, kind of, sort of, but with some major difference.
And this made its debut at Gen Con this last summer. They actually had a... I guess it was Arena that came out.
Well, we saw this first in black and white manuscript.
Right. So,
what you're getting here, besides a complete detail of the City of Penance, you're getting 3 new player character races, 5 new prestige races, 2 new prestige classes, and your average smattering of new magic items, monsters, and spells. Cover price is $25.95. Now, what you need to do, D-Dell, is... send email to adlon@mortality.net. Give me your snail mail info and we'll drop this in the mail. To those of you previous prize winners, to this date, all prizes are in the mail and have been shipped. So, we're going to go ahead and take some... Alrighty, cool. We're going to go ahead and open up the lines...
Need to post the number.
Yeah, I know. I just need to look it up because we have the alternate number for tonight. Now, I'll find out what exactly is going on with that other line, but I'm not going to worry about it tonight. Alrighty then. And here comes a phone number. Alrighty. All right. Now, those of you who call in, if we have, say, 4 people that call in to talk about miniatures and terrain and what you actually invest in it, I roll a D4 with Andrew Dice Bot, and that's our winner for another prize. That's a grab bag, but you're going to get at least an adventure module all the way up through a source book.
Can you win 2 weeks in a row?
Can you win 2 weeks in a row?
Sure. It's a random thing.
Yeah, we can do that. You can, for the call-ins, we can do that. For the main thing...
For the winner of the actual question,
we're going to space you out a little bit for the big one, but... anyway, for the call-ins, like I said, you're going to get at least an adventure from a notable publisher, and it could all go all the way up to a hardback. It's pretty much we draw them out of the box at random, so... Caller number one, huh? Mortality Radio.
Hello, Ed.
Who's this?
This is Ed. First time actually.
All right, cool.
Great show. Enjoy it. And
where are you calling from?
I find myself spending quite a bit on miniatures right now with the new wizard miniatures, the pre-painted ones.
Uh huh.
And by the way, I'm located in Indianapolis, so when you guys come up to Gen Con, you should look me up.
Well, we'll do that. You'll probably be easier to find us than for us to find you.
Enjoyed the show. Just wanted to call and say thank you.
Well, tell us about what you invest in in miniatures and terrains and stuff like that.
Well, lately I've been doing a lot of paper cutout. For the backgrounds and the maps, and then I've been using the wizard's miniatures. Like I said, I've probably got about $500-$600 invested in right now.
So, do you actually, you paint your own miniatures too, or are you pretty much gravitating with the wizard's ones, or what?
I used to paint them some, but I'm not an artist. I like to play.
That's cool. That's cool. That's pretty much the way I go about it. I mean, I'm not very artistically inclined. I tried to paint a fig once, and he was horrible. I ended up giving it to a friend of mine, and he did an excellent job with it. So.
I won figure painting contests. So I like to do that.
I couldn't even paint an orc. That's how bad.
I'm one of those people that I just love to say, I don't want to use them. I just want to put them out, and like I said, I've got them in a china cabinet.
So anyway, and where was he calling from?
Indy.
Oh, alrighty.
Which I found. Going up to Gen Con was my first time there. I'm from Illinois, but going up to Indianapolis, I found it was a real nice city. You know, being down there downtown, right across from the Capitol and everything, that was a lot of fun.
I think as people keep coming up to the city, they'll find there's a lot of places a little further out that are even more interesting.
But, you know, everything we needed was just right downtown. You know, I talked to a couple of the merchants while I was... wandering about when I wasn't in the convention center, and they were pleasantly surprised that they were overwhelmed by how many people attended.
Well, I have a 13-year-old daughter, and I've kind of been out of gaming for a while, and I decided, you know, I'd get back into it and get her involved in it. So we both went out, and we had thoughts, and I always wanted to go to Gen Con, never got a chance. That was my first one. And being a local, that made it really neat.
Well, my two boys are 9 and 10, and they watched me game for years, and I made them promise that they had to learn how to read and do math before they could game, and they fought me tooth and nail, and they finally just this last year started gaming with me. So it's a joy to have your children game with you. It's kind of like passing the torch.
Right.
So... Well, take some time, go around the site. You can go back into the archives and stream the older shows. You know, you may learn something more about current way gaming is done since you've been out of it for a while.
Actually, that's one of the first things I did. I live on the country out here. I have a 5016 modem here, but at work we've got a DSL connection. I've downloaded all the archives, all the old shows, and decided I want to hear one live for once.
Cool. Well, glad you came, and hopefully you make more shows. And you're in the drawing for our last prize of the night. So if you're the only caller, guess what? You win.
I appreciate it, guys.
All right. Well, good luck to you, man. Thanks for calling.
Hey, one last thing.
Sure.
You got here at Fort Myers, right?
Yeah.
You heard of the Red Coconut, the little campground on the beach?
I don't think it's there anymore.
Oh, really? Because that's one place we used to go out and take a camper down and hang out for a while.
Yeah, you're thinking of the Pink Porpoise that's gone. Or
Pink
Shell.
Shell
is gone.
Yeah, but I used to do deliveries on the
beach. There's a lot of those campgrounds down there, too, so it depends on the obscurity level of this campground.
Right, it could have changed names. It might still be there, but it might have changed owners and names. It's hard to say. Things changed out here so fast.
Right. Have a good evening, guys.
You too.
All right, thanks for calling, man.
All right.
Okay, so is anybody else going to try to get in on this? Are we going to hand it to Atten? Somebody else wants in.
Who's calling Mortality?
Hey, it's Drax.
Hey, Drax.
Drax.
What's up, bud?
Drax is going to become an addict.
Well, you guys said we can, you know, play some in 2 weeks, possibly, so...
And, you know, we got the product, we do want to give it out, you know, we want to keep it spread out, but at the same time, we want to have fun, so...
So, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to comment on that. I personally use the Wizards ones. I used to paint my own, but, you know, $3 or $4 a figure on average and time investment gets a little pricey on, you know, on a gamer's budget, and I'm sure most people are in that same boat.
I look at it too that way. If you buy them right, it's a buck a fig.
Uh-huh.
You bust them out of the little plastic bags, and you got an army ready to go.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And like what you said, you know, if you need a bunch of orcs or something, you just go buy the Warcraft stuff.
Yeah, well, my goblins, when I first started, were PC figs, NPC figs. They were placeholders.
Uh-huh.
You know, people use counters, you know, like dragon scale counters. You know, it just representing where their character is.
Oh, exactly. I've seen that too. And I was thinking, like, you know, if you got a situation too where, like, you got a purple worm or something.
extra fig on top of whatever you got for the purple worm.
Right.
Exactly. So it's a much cheaper alternative, and I think it actually helps understand what's, you know, what's taking place in the combat.
Yeah.
But there's one thing I was what I use is that we were talking last week about the campaign cartographer. One of the ways I do it is just to, you know, kind of blow up those maps, especially for dungeons and stuff. The game I play in and the one I run, that's a great way to kind of save yourself kind of time and money in terms of like walls and furniture and stuff. I mean, you can just print them out right at scale and just lay them right down on your battle map or whatever. So I mean, as far as saving, you know, money on miniature dungeon accessories and that kind of stuff, it's a good way to, you know, to still have things at scale and still have the feel on the board, but without all the expense.
Right. Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the Chessex battle maps are well worth the cost. If you take care of them, you'll have them forever. And I like kind of what Weird Uncle Rufus says. You know, we each have our own individual figure, and we plop her down on the map, and he sketches the dungeon around our figures, and we move as the map moves, and, you know, he throws out the little foamy cutouts for the monsters and stuff, so we don't go into a lot of expense with it.
And we don't in our game either. I mean, we'll go down to like all the like Halloween USA and buy the little tiny little spiders and stuff that people use as wall decorations, but they make great large spiders in a game board. You know, things like that. And you get a bunch of those for, you know, $3-4. You get a whole bag of them. So there's a lot of alternatives out there if you think about it. You know, I actually, just to use for like commoners and stuff, I went out to one of those dollar stores and bought a bunch of probably 1800s looking, you know, village characters that were like little holiday villages that they sell. And they're probably, you know, they're a little bit out of scale, but, you know, if all you're looking for is just placeholders for commoners that would be, you know, in a 3D look with the rest of the figs, it works great. And they're, you know, I got like four of them in a box for $1. So, you know, you can't beat that.
No, that's a good investment. If you hunt the right places, you go to the dollar stores and the flea markets, it's amazing what you can find.
Oh, yeah, there's a bag of dinosaurs out there still that's got a boulet in it.
Yep.
Exactly. Yep. They're all great alternatives to, you know, having to go down to the hobby store and you know, paying the long $3 or $4 per figure. You know, there's a lot of alternatives out there. So I guess that's the, you know, the one advice that I would have is just don't always think that to have figures on your table that you got to go to a hobby store and, you know, and pay, you know, top money for a Ralph Hartha or, you know, whatever else company figure that, you know, yeah, if you want them for your main characters and certain creatures, you know, great. And that, you know, if you like to paint them, more power to you. But if you're just looking for placeholder figures on the table, there are cheaper alternatives, like to the flea market or going to dollar stores or other arts and crafts type of stores. Have plenty of things that you can use that will look good on your table and serve the purpose. So.
All right. So.
Well, listen, man. Thanks for calling. And you're in the running.
Right,
and we're going to see how many other people want in on this before we wrap up. So we might have another package going out to you soon.
Sounds good. Have a good one, guys.
All right, man.
See you.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, well, who wants a piece of this? We got Atten, a new listener here for the first time in the chat room, listening live. We got Drax, who already won something last show. All righty. Mortality Radio.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Tadero.
Hey, what's going on?
What is it, Tadero?
Tadero.
Hey, Tadero.
How's it going, guys?
You're
going
to try for the other end of the contest now, huh?
But hey, man, I think I have a little one or two points to make on this discussion, so you guys want to hear them?
Sure, go ahead.
No, we just had the top. No, I'm only kidding. Go ahead, man.
Hey, man, someone already mentioned it on the board, but I recently picked up those tactile maps. I actually got the tip from the Mortality board on these new, some company in Alabama put out these tactile maps, which they're on a hard plastic, like, puzzle piece. They're about a page in size, and you buy them, they come in like a set of 12, and they're awesome. I ruined my old Chessex battle map with a Sharpie marker. So I picked these up, and man, they're the way to go as far as your grid, your grid battle map. I think the URL is bc-products.com. Anyway, as far as battle maps go, that's the way to go.
All right. Anything else on that?
Yeah, I also want to say, as far as the monsters, you know, in my Skylands game, it's kind of hard to find, you know, Reaper miniatures that really coincide with a lot of the crazy monsters in the game. So here recently, I started getting Sculpty, which is kind of like your modeling clay.
Yeah.
And kind of making my own little monsters and baking them in the oven and then painting them up.
Yeah, you can make a purple worm real easy that way.
Oh, yeah, you know, and you can make it to scale, and you pretty much, you know, you can make your own custom miniatures, and it's pretty easy. It doesn't have to be, you know, like Reaper quality or whatever, but as far as monsters go, it's very cheap.
All right, well, because I know what campaign setting you like, I'd like to see you crank out a lower Gorgon. Serious, put one together and take a digital picture of it and post it up on the site, man. I'd like to see what you put out.
Sure, man, I'll give it a go.
Hey, you know, all those miniature sculptors, they all started somewhere.
Or a high Gorgon in full attack mode.
Oh, man, with all the snakes coming out of his belly, yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him do a Piscean myself.
One, the big red one, or one of the smaller ones?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
That's a good idea, though. That and another thing just come to mind, too, about investment for terrain and stuff is these guys at Dungeon Works have these cardboard cutouts. For a nominal few bucks, you download the PDF and you can print out all these different props.
Yeah, but the hidden cost is in your ink cartridge and your printer.
Yeah, that's the trade-off. But they give you some good tips in the readme that comes with it to keep the overhead low on ink, so.
And you know, WizKids puts out those dress-up
things, too.
Yeah, that they just debuted last summer, so they're about 30 bucks for a set, but they come with a ton of stuff.
Yeah. So, well, cool, man. You're in the running.
All right, cool, guys. Good work, y'all.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
We're going to see who else wants a piece of this.
All right.
All right.
See ya.
See ya, man. There you go. Okay. We're running out of gas here, guys, so we're going to give it about 30 more seconds, and we're going to start wrapping up.
That's right. So
who wants a piece of this?
We'll get one more if somebody wants to call in.
Oh, it'll have to be a Yahtzee game. Mortality
is our victim.
Hey, guys. This is Thoth.
Who?
Thoth. I'm in the room.
Thoth. Okay, Thoth, yeah. I see you there. How you doing, man? Where you calling from?
I'm in Oregon.
Oregon?
Yep. West Coast.
Cool.
So,
good, nice state. Very nice state. So what do you got to say about miniatures and terrain and what you invest in it?
Well, let's see. I haven't used miniatures for a very long time because of the cost, but a recent player who had to leave the group but is expected to return left some 300 miniatures. So I'd like to use those for villains. I don't really sort through them for finding.
Need you to speak up a little bit there, bud.
I don't really use figurines for fodder like orcs and goblins, etc.
Okay.
There's pennies. I put colored stickers on them. And then the markings on the pennies line up with the combat sheet, such that goblin 1, G1, G2, G3. They're easily recyclable.
Oh, okay, yeah, he had actually posted that in the room a little bit ago.
Yep.
Okay, I have been following the room too closely.
That's actually a very ingenious way of doing it, and that's certainly a cheap way, because, you know, you can always find pennies.
Sure, pennies, they're everywhere.
Yeah, like somebody just posted in the room, 100 of those markers cost you a whole buck.
good.
So
I like to do a lot of ship battles now, and what I found is
So you definitely go the low end route.
Totally low end. I encourage my players to play figurines that most of them have. We go to the shop and find ones that correspond to their characters, but and at the cost, just the outfit, you know, an army or a small group of men to make them look the same and cool and all. I mean, kudos to those people who do that, but I don't have the time or payola for that.
Okay, cool.
But the same flooring stores, they often have wood, like hardwood samples that you can put down on your floors, and they usually correspond to a 1-inch scale. I found like little 3x3-inch squares, 4x3-inch squares, etc. And the beautiful thing about these is that you can just you throw them down at random on your Chessex mat and you have, you know, instant small village. Plus you can superimpose paper on those and, you know, if you want to have like locking little squares for dungeons and stuff. So yeah, totally low end route.
Alright, cool. Well, we got you down in the running for tonight's prize, so where in Oregon are you?
Portland.
All right.
Way cool, man. Thanks for calling in, and, you know, keep coming back, man. Like to have you guys here, so.
Yep.
You have a good evening, and we'll be announcing a winner here in a minute.
All right.
See you guys.
Good luck, man.
Good luck.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and spam, and we're going to start also about saying goodnight. And
that's
if we
right.
don't get interrupted, dang.
Mortality
Radio.
Hi, this is Finanthus.
Hey, Finn, what's happening?
Not much.
Long time no see.
Yeah, I know. I've been offline because I've been playing a game on Fridays.
Well, we can't exactly blame you for that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been catching the downloads, but opportunity knocking and so forth.
Yeah, you can't blame me for that. So what do you got to say?
Well, about the whole thing, the middle ground that I see, instead of using pennies or markers and things, you know, actual Reaper minis that cost $8, go to a dollar store and get like cowboys and Indians.
Or little green army men.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
I mean, that way you can have, you know, general point and direction. And all the fun of cheapness and not having to worry about melting the guns.
You can also buy little cheap knights and armor, too. I mean, they're floating around dollar stores, too.
Exactly. I mean, because I'm all about the low-end spectrum because I'm dirt cheap. So why not go with cowboy and Indian just for, you know, 3D effect?
Right. So there's not a lot of people that actually do go out and go the whole battle system route where they lay out a table with three-dimensional hills and break out the tape. And I actually did that at a local con, and it's like, while it was a lot of fun, it's like I said, I don't know many people who have room to set up. I know Adlon has the room where he could set up a table and have it there permanently and set up a three-dimensional dungeon that, you know, okay, this week we do this, and then next week we uncover the next part and move on. He's got that kind of room, a spare room where he could do it. I don't have that room. So
at a gaming store around here, there's somebody actually built a replica of Helm's Deep.
Wow.
For their Middle Earth minis.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's immense, and it's totally accurate, which is scary.
That's cool. And you're in Texas, aren't you?
Houston, Texas.
That's right. I still have your prize. When he gets the email with your correct address,
sorry.
I will send it to you.
Hey, that's right, man.
You won that one CD from us.
Yeah, that's right.
CD?
No, not the Celtic. It was the one. It was a game system that was on a CD.
Halloween prize.
Yeah, and
what was it?
It was a Halloween prize. It's something we picked up down at Omniverse, and I have it. I even still have the envelope with it. I'll have to unpack it because I moved, and it's still in one of my file boxes. But
right.
You know, when I get the correct address, when Brian gets the correct address, I will send it to you.
Hey, not a problem.
So we got
send your address to Smog
only because I might not be getting your email this time around. You know, I'm going to roll a die here in a little bit and see who won.
So at least send it to smogdragon@mortality.net. So we've got you down in the running, so good luck.
Sweet.
All right.
Take care, guys.
See ya.
See ya, man. Thanks for calling. All right, guys, we're going to spam the room one more time, and whether we get one more call or not, we're out of here within 2 or 3 minutes. So it's the last chance to call in. We got 5 callers. Are we going to make it an even die 6 roll or what? Don't look that way.
Mortality, who's our victim?
Hey, it's Pete Dowell. I don't want to talk to your wife before anyone is. I figured I'd call in real quick.
All right, call in real quick. What's up, bud?
I don't know why you say that a lot of people have some great ideas. You think that if you're going to do mass combats with, like, just real quick killer monsters using pennies or things like that is the way to go. That's what I do. If I'm going to have, like, a real big bad guy, that's where I go. I pick up a special thing, and I'll paint them up. The new wizards, the way they're doing adventures, packing them randomly. I had a chance to look at them. I think they don't look that bad at all. I think they're really good to use. Especially with what WizKids is doing with those collapsible dungeons they can put up is great too. So I'd say I put a lot of money in on what I want for terrain and miniatures just because I come from a wargaming background. But I mean, even with your past shows where you talk to Skip Williams and whatnot, Legos and things like that are really useful too. So there's lots of stuff you can use.
Yeah, I know Bruce and Patrick got the, I can't even think of what they are, but there's a new dragon kind of set. They're like Legos. They're almost like Duplos.
Yep.
And they got the entire set. I mean, every possible, accessory. Their dad went out and got them for Christmas. And they got it put up at their dad's house up in New Hampshire. So, they got a, those are real nice, but they're not to scale.
Yep.
But
well, I used to game with some people that were real crazy war gamers, and they got the real fancy dungeon works, cavern dungeon sets and all that. And as beautiful as they are, you're really going to spend the time before the game to set it up and kind of cover up areas you may not want the people to see. So there are drawbacks to that. But I think using miniatures and terrain is good, but it's not necessary for the game. I'm glad that the topic brought up a good discussion.
So, well, it was a good topic, and we got a good response from it, so I think we're going to close it out here.
Absolutely. I'll drop off when you guys get back to what you're doing.
Okay.
All right, man. Thanks
for
calling.
Where are you calling from?
Philadelphia. I'm not going to be here very much longer. I'm moving back to Massachusetts.
Oh, so you're going from ice cold to colder.
Yeah, but Boston's calling. I have to go, so I'm on my way.
All right.
Well, good luck with the move.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for calling.
See ya.
All right, are we going to get number 6 for this contest? And we start the countdown.
5.
10.
8.
15.
40.
35.
Hike.
8. All right.
Let's roll a D10 and divide by 2.
Mortality Radio?
Hey.
Who's this?
This is Magistus 7.
Magistus 7. Alrighty then.
Okay.
Where are you calling from, bud?
San Diego, California.
Oh, well, it's warm out there.
Yep.
Alright, you said San Diego?
Yeah.
Yes.
Alrighty, I used to go down to Del Mar a lot.
Yeah, I'm not far from there, actually.
Well, my ex-wife used to run the ponies. She was an exercise rider, so she used to go down there for the meet and then up to L.A. for the oak tree meets and stuff at Santa Anita. My daughter was born in Los Angeles, in Arcadia. So, anyway, what do you got to tell us about your investment for minis and terrain?
Well, actually, the best thing that we ever came with is many years ago, there was that old HeroQuest board game, which would have great for pieces to be able to use for miniatures.
You're talking about the board game with the plastic figs that somehow miraculously vanished from my house.
Actually, I had the same thing happen, too. I have the board, and I have, like, a lot of the furniture, but all the minis I've lost over here.
That's what, Milton Bradley?
Right.
Yeah, the had the white skeletons in there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, with the sides.
And they had the really nice arbalists and things. Yeah, that was a good set.
Yeah, actually, I missed those pieces because they were great for whenever you need, like, a bunch of warts or goblins or whatever.
You can't buy that game brand new anymore. It's done.
Right, but any Milton Bradley game, you send them $50, they will produce a copy of that game for you.
Yeah,
you didn't know that? I'm surprised.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I see them on eBay for, like, super cheap a lot of times also.
So, yeah, it's a real, real easy thing to do. You get in touch. Well, of course, now they're under the Hasbro umbrella, but you can still do that. You can go back and get some of the classic games. Like, I used to have Voice of the Mummy back in the early 70s, which was a Milton Bradley game, and I lost that, you know, through several moves. And, you know, if I really wanted to get it, you can always, you know, send them $50 and they'll produce a copy for you. And price might have gone up. The last time I had heard about it, it was $50, and I was looking for Cathedral. And then when I went to work for the Game Zone or the whatever it was, Game Wizard, the Wizards place that I worked at the mall, we had Cathedral. And so that's where I got my copy finally. So it had also changed companies two or three times. So, that's a great idea. And they are floating around, and I'm sure, you know, you haunt the yard sales and stuff, and you got, you know, people getting out of college and selling their childhood memories and stuff in the yard sale to raise money to start their, you know, adult life. And you can run across those things. You just got to watch for them.
Well,
are we still there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Okay. Oh, okay.
You kind of dropped off the line.
I was just making sure that, you know, I thought you were still talking there for a moment.
Okay.
Well, listen, we're gonna cut you off there, and we're gonna roll us a die 6 or maybe a die 12, divide by 2, whatever comes up, and we're gonna announce our winner, and we're gonna wrap this show up.
All right. Thanks for calling.
All right, man. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for calling.
See ya.
Later.
Okay, a couple of things. Yes, the show's running about an hour later than normal, but we kind of expected that, having the likes of Ed Greenwood as our guest tonight. Big shout-out, extra big shout-out to you on the other side of the pond, Morris Freakstone. Let's see, it's 11,
and
it's about 4 in the morning.
And Maransareth.
And Maransareth, who's the other way. God, yeah. I forget how to find out the time he's got there, but he'll let us know real soon. But, yeah, you guys are burning that 4 a.m. morning midnight oil over there, so...
Right. Not to mention that, you know, it is our 50th show, so an extra hour is not a big thing for that.
Anyway, all right, here comes the big roll. I'm going to roll a die 12, we'll divide by 2. How does that sound?
Okay.
I don't roll too many 12s. So... an 8.
That'd be a 4.
So, let's see, going down in order. 2, 4, 6, 8.
Thoth!
Thoth! Thoth is our winner.
That's like trying to say Phanathalus.
Naphthur is the one.
Oh, Naphthur, that's right, Naphthur.
We talk with lists here. Okay, Thoth, you have won.
So you will get a prize package in the mail. You need Avalon is sending you.
We do a random drawing
of prizes from the prize closet. This could be any number of things. We have spell cards. We have dice. We have modules. We have source books from a number of different publishers. Something will end up in your prize package, and you will be pleasantly surprised. And if it's something you already have, well, you know, Valentine's Day is coming up, Easter's coming up, birthdays, you know,
4th of July.
Give it to a friend.
Yep. But definitely. I picked the prizes out of the boxes at random, I have 3 boxes of prize goodies. So I basically, I do a die roll, and I know which box I'm going into, and I just reach in and grab something. So
One of these days I'll have him bring it down here so I can draw it.
Or come out to the house. You only live 10 minutes away.
Oh! But you know, my day's off and your day's off are two different things, and I'm usually with my kids on my day off.
Okay, well, bring the kids.
Well, yeah, there is that, too.
Alrighty.
So
Thoth, you're our winner for our call-in segment of the Behind the Screen contest. D-Dell is our topic submitter winner, and he gets the big prize of the night. Guys, big shout-out to all of you for coming. And staying with us as long as you have up with us.
It was great for our 50th show. We saw a lot of faces we haven't seen in a long time. We hope to see you guys again. Next show, we have Joe Browning and Susie Yee from Expeditious Retreat. They did the Magical Mystery Europe, which was a big Emmy winner last year.
Magical
Medieval Europe. I'm sorry. It's Beatles night.
Yep.
And they've got a new product coming out in April, so we're going to be talking about their old one, and they're going to be talking about their new one. So in 2 weeks, Expeditious Retreat. Now, we're also looking for ideas for anybody you want to see in the future. I'll get in contact with them and lay that out. You can send any suggestions to smogdragon@mortality.net.
Oh, we might actually have you make a poll in the Shoutcast.
Hey, there's an idea. I might even do that.
Say 10 guests or so,
right,
and see who gets hammered the most.
Now, I do have, what's his name? Trollords. Steve Chenault has asked to be on.
Really?
Yeah,
he was on a long time ago, I think as a random call-in.
Right, and Bad Axe Games, you wanted to contact them.
Yeah,
too,
I want Wolf Ratbane.
So we will...
His real name evades me. Yeah, that is his real name.
Yeah, we will... Okay. We're definitely going to be getting in contact with those, so I will have March laid out by the next show.
Also, pass the word, we're looking to get the D20 Traveler guys on. Hunter, we're coming for you, buddy.
That's right.
I owe you a show, and we're getting you going here. It's a little long in the tooth for the amount of time that went by, but we're going to get the D20 Traveler.
So we will, not Troll Phone Man, Trollord Games.
Well, he is the Troll Phone.
Oh, okay.
That's why it was called the Troll Phone.
Okay, there you go.
He called in with the first crappy phone ever.
That was before me.
And they dubbed it the Troll Phone.
Okay.
I think I was solo back then.
Yeah, you might have been.
Yeah,
was that the pre-Rufus show? Was that a pre-Rufus show? Because I remember Hal was down here, and you were talking about Troll Phone Dead, so it had to be.
One of the first six months of the show.
So, all right. So, 50th is gone, 51st show in 2 weeks.
And
my sister's birthday, actually.
Is it?
Yeah, she's going to be 42.
All righty, then. Well, guys, all I can tell you is, A, thanks for coming, and hopefully you all enjoyed the show. And B, we're out of here.
Oh, one more thing. You brought it up while we were talking to Ed, and I didn't want to say anything, but for those of you in the political forum, there's going to be a float coming soon to your town. It's called
pantsonfire.net
or .com.
.net.
It's a float. It's an effigy of George Bush with his pants on fire. It's driving around Fort Myers tonight. It's going to Sarasota and moving up the west coast of Florida. It may come to your town. Go out to their website, pantsonfire.net.
Pantsonfire.net. It's an anti-George Bush movement.
And
the float looks ridiculous.
So
it's funny, but it looks ridiculous.
So enjoy it if it comes to your town. Just one of those little weird things that happens down here in the swamps of Florida. So
then again, we have a festival called the Swamp Cabbage Festival too. So
right, where you eat the top of a palm tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, go figure.
Anyway, guys, it's late. We're out of here.
We're punchy. See ya.
Thanks for coming. And we're gonna close out the show with a seasonal song. It's very seasonal for this time of year.
Because I got my returns.
So enjoy.
3, 4, 1.
Let me tell you how it will be. believe.